party that provided a hero's welcome at their own conference for a woman who literally called for a pogrom on social media, and of course is led by a man whose school contemporaries remember him intoning that Jews should be gassed and that Hitler was right. Doesn't stop some people talking to them, but I do wonder what meaningful and substantive improvement would look like.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Home Secretary has rejected calls for a pause on pro-Palestine marches after an attack on two Jewish men in North London. The terror watchdog has called anti-Semitism in the UK a national emergency, but Shemana Mahmood has said the UK's not there yet. Former Home Secretary Suella Braverman has told LBC the government should be doing more to protect the Jewish community.
It's becoming unsurprising and it's becoming a regular feature of Jewish life in Britain. It was, I think, last week that Kenton Synagogue was attacked. Golders Green was attacked about 6 weeks ago. So this is a crisis. This is a crisis. These are not isolated incidents. And they are, I'm afraid, they could have been avoided.
Ministers have announced a further £25 million this morning to keep Jewish communities safe. The funding will go towards increasing police presence in Jewish areas and more security for synagogues and schools. LBC has uncovered thousands of cases of water companies delaying reports of potentially illegal sewage spills across England and Wales. The data includes dozens of cases where firms took more than a year to disclose that they had been responsible for pollutants entering Britain's waterways. Robert Forrester is a whistleblower who used to work at the Environment Agency.
The data is an absolute disgrace. Pollution events are fast-moving events, so the sooner you attend them, the better. That means the better evidence is gathered. If you delay it, you allow that impact to go undetected to some extent.
10 people have now been arrested in connection with allegations of sexual offences and modern slavery in Crewe. Members of the group, Ahmadi Religion of Peace and Light, were detained when properties were raided yesterday. Donald Trump has suggested the King would have probably helped the US in its war against Iran. Charles and Camilla are due to arrive back at the White House later after visiting New York on their four-day state visits. And a new technique has shown positive signs of improving communication difficulties for children with autism. The method uses magnetic pulses to stimulate the brain, which has also previously been used to treat depression. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 48 points at 10,261. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a cloudy start in the southwest with some scattered showers too. Staying dry and fine elsewhere with a high of 23 degrees. From Global Newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after ten and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Something that you do, I think, in order to, perhaps help me cut through some of the noise that sometimes clouds the most important factors. And goodness me, there's a lot of noise around today when really the focus should be on two things: the welfare of the men that were stabbed in Golders Green yesterday and the question of whether anything more can be done to prevent such occurrences from unfolding. I've told you a few times, but possibly usually in quite a light-hearted or jolly fashion, that over the years that I've been doing this job, some of the connections that I've made with people who listen to the programme have evolved into more than a mere phone-in show. And of course, some of the people that get in touch with me off-air, who've never come on the programme, but with whom I build up a rapport or a relationship. And two people in that category have been in touch with me since yesterday's show. One, an Orthodox rabbi who WhatsApped me to draw attention to something he'd posted on Twitter because he knows that I'm not on Twitter anymore. He had been to visit both victims of yesterday's attack and reported that they were in a stable condition and he was praying for their full recovery. It truly feels like a miracle, he wrote. It could have been far worse. Calling also, while the government is quick to show solidarity with the Jewish community, the reality is that these gestures do little to deter anti-Semitic terrorists or address the deeper issues behind such attacks. I don't think you can quibble with any of that. And then another very, very personal message that I received from somebody who has spoken on the programme, you know, the importance of reaching out to Jewish friends at times like this, just to tell them that they are in your thoughts and that you are concerned for their well-being, whether mental or physical. And then you learn things like this, and you're absolutely reminded of why that should be. I have taken the decision not to take, and then she provides the name of her son, to a Hebrew playgroup that I had planned to attend from this weekend in, and then she mentions a suburb of North London, and that is an extraordinary moment in their lives, and one that illustrates, I think, perfectly the way that the events in Golders Green yesterday emanate outwards. So that is an illustration of the things that I would like to zone in on and focus on, the reality of an experience and the possibility of a better response. Some of the things I feel beholden to point out we shouldn't be listening to would be opportunistic politicians using this as an opportunity to either attack opponents with little or no reason, not just politicians, of course, plenty of people in the media as well, or even worse. So I listened to Suella Braverman this morning, a woman who chose to join a political party after it emerged that it was led by a man whose school contemporaries claimed to recall him repeatedly engaging in the most vile anti-Semitism, up to and including in chanting "gas the Jews" and insisting that Hitler was right. Nigel Farage, of course, also hosted a conference that saw that Lucy Conley person invited onto a stage and receive a hero's welcome after she was quite rightly jailed for using social media to call for a pogrom in Britain, to call for people in Britain to be burnt in their beds, effectively, in the buildings that they were inhabiting. So quite how anybody can think that they have a right to speak out against something that their own party, whether it's violence against a community or whether it is base anti-Semitism, is riddled with allegations of. Some of the stuff that's coming out about various politicians, we're prevented from reporting in full at the moment because of Purdah. So let's silence that noise. Other noise that perhaps should be zoned out a little bit would include Benjamin Netanyahu's attempts to portray Britain or the British government in a negative light over this, because Benjamin Netanyahu, of course, is a man who, were he to set foot in London tomorrow, our authorities would be required to arrest him. When he flies to visit his friend Donald Trump in the United States of America, they have to alter the flight path to avoid flying over countries where he would also, it would also be required that he was arrested. And to take sort of moral lessons from him is extraordinary, frankly. My friend, who is not taking their son to Hebrew playgroup this weekend as a consequence of the kind of fears that we are talking about today, picks up on that point. And so too does David Aranovich in his latest Substack. The idea that Netanyahu is going to try to pretend, if you like, that the war in Iran would have been more successful if only European allies had joined in, and therefore the attacks upon the British government today, the accusations being levelled against the British government, are, they need to be understood, don't they? My friend who is not taking their son to Hebrew kindergarten on this weekend writes writes the following. I'm going to read it at some length because it really is important. I listened to the phone-in when you discussed the most recent attacks last week, and I very much appreciated your view, which I share, that it should be possible and necessary to oppose Netanyahu's genocide and endless war agenda while also opposing anti-Semitism at the same time. I think there was a loaded word missing from the conversation, Zionism. It's a difficult term because it means many different things to different people, even among Jewish and Israeli people. Itamar Ben-Gvir, for example, has hijacked it and named his party the Religious Zionists, while Yair Golan, who sits on the opposite end of the political spectrum, also defines himself as a Zionist. They clearly don't mean the same thing. I fear that among the anti-genocide community, which I feel part of in many ways, Zionism, which is to me predominantly the right of the Jewish people to self-determination in the land they have inhabited for decades, but by no means a justification for genocide, is often reduced to something purely evil. Defining oneself as anti-Zionist, which I hear more and more often, can become a bridge to anti-Semitism. Anti-Zionism is, to my mind, a valid position when one can clearly justify what it means to them, but more often than not, when I've challenged friends on what Zionism means to them, they couldn't really say, or it essentially boiled down to the dismantling of the modern Jewish state. So according to that analysis, which I think is pretty close to faultless, it's a word that is so loaded now and so nuanced that it can't really be it's why it was missing from the conversation that they refer to. It can't really be introduced into the conversation coolly or calmly. And then calls to ban marches in solidarity with the Palestinian people also seem to me to execute a hideous conflation of things that we need to keep separate. Offering support for the Palestinian people or condemning genocide in Gaza does not and should never be conflated with hatred of Jews or anti-Semitism. Of course, it happens from all angles. Benjamin Netanyahu frequently claims that every atrocity that his government undertakes is justified by the need to protect Jews. But Benjamin Netanyahu undertakes on an almost daily basis precisely the conflation that people often accused of anti-Semitism in this country are condemned for conflating. It's hideous. And those of us who have managed to maintain objectivity and step back, because you don't have personal skin in the game, so to speak, step back from the incredibly binary nature of much of this debate, have seen this coming from a thousand miles away. You know, the idea that that Netanyahu would somehow be good for international relations or even for Jewish people in this country has struck me for a very long time as grimly unlikely. David Aranovich's latest Substack, which I think was published in, it was published in one of the Jewish newspapers before events in Golders Green yesterday. It's a great piece under the headline, Israel Has Finally Lost the West, explaining what I have just tried to précis myself. But he's provided a postscript to it, which says, 2 days before I published this, a man stabbed two, visibly, as the chief rabbi's description, Jewish people in the suburb of Golders Green, an area close to where I live and which I often visit. So I'm drawing on three areas of thought from Jewish people, two of whom have got in touch with me personally and one of whom has a rather splendid Substack to which I subscribe. The police said the suspect had a history of serious violence and mental health issues, but nevertheless were treating the incident as a case of terrorism. What was particularly ominous about this was the idea that this man had identified obvious Jews as a target for his rage. And now he comes to the point I've just tried to make. Immediately after the attack, as has become its habit, the Israeli government blamed the British government for somehow allowing the attack, as though there is a world where a single figure carrying a concealed knife on a suburban street can always be stopped before he attacks someone. There is, writes David Aranovich, I think, a kind of dark chutzpah to an allegation like that. I can't sit inside the addled brain of this week's attacker, but my guess is that it's their supposed association with Israel that may well be behind his murderous assaults. So there are some of, or some examples of the things that I think we should be trying to dial down when it comes to asking the question about what we should be doing instead. Okay? It's 14 minutes after 10. OMG, James, your opening remarks feel like the first sane thing I have heard since this happened, writes Reg. Keep it up, mate. The UK needs sanity. Thank God sensible discussion has returned to the airwaves, writes Kelly. And, I mean, on a similar theme, I should probably read out a few more messages in the course of the morning, but I want to start by asking you this question. Turn down the volume on people who remain silent about anti-Semitism when it is alleged against their own party leader, or remain approving of calls for pogroms against other minorities or other communities. Zone out the self-serving words of the Israeli regime, led, as I will repeatedly remind you, by a man who would be arrested were he to set foot, or would be required to be arrested by the authorities were he to set foot in this country. But think also for a moment, focus upon the ancient hatreds that are bubbling to the surface once again. Separate, or at least try to separate, if you can, your feelings about current events in the Middle East from two millennia old bigotry, hatred, violence. I mean, one of the things I have to try to keep out of my contemplations and my thinking on mornings like this is the fact that the words Jew hate or anti-Semitism have been so liberally sprinkled around this country by and directed at people who are nothing of the sort, as everybody honest knows. You almost wonder what vocabulary you need to describe the events that happen in Golders Green and what appears to be the motivation behind them. If you're going to describe people marching in solidarity with dead Palestinian children as being Jew haters, what words have you got left to describe the attacker in Golders Green yesterday? Who, I mean, there are no words to describe the contempt that one feels towards him. And perhaps that's the problem. There are no words left to describe the contempt one feels towards him, because the words have all been used up by the kind of people who used to message me with allegations of anti-Semitism for simply mourning the slaughter of innocents in Gaza. But none of that changes the fact that one particular community in this country, faces a unique threat, a unique danger. In fact, I would go so far as to say that throughout those 2,000 years, Jewish people in this country have faced, on this planet, in fact, the UK historically doesn't have the worst record when it comes to accommodating Jews. It certainly doesn't have a spotless record, but it's better than many other European countries. But it is a unique threat. And it is born of ancient hatreds and beliefs on the part of the haters. And how you defuse some of the current situation, I'm going to be completely honest with you, I'm not sure it's possible. I don't think it's helpful for people like Richard Tice or Kemi Badenoch to be automatic, and Suella Braverman to automatically be trying to use this tragedy to attack other politicians, because that's the beauty of opposition, isn't it? Is that you can simply shout, something must be done from the rooftops, without really having to provide any detail on what that something would be. David Aranovich's words in the postscript to his latest piece are, I think, pretty close to inarguable. There is no world in which a single figure carrying a concealed knife on a suburban street can always be stopped before he attacks someone. But there is a world in which the streets on which it's most likely to happen can be identified and therefore can enjoy better protection, perhaps, than other streets. But what does that look like? So you turn to some of the irresponsible headlines, never mind the hideously opportunistic politicians, and you learn that the terror watchdog thinks that anti-Semitism is the biggest national emergency since COVID. you discover that Benjamin Netanyahu has described Jew hate as being out of control in the UK, on all of these headlines. And I think the MP, Sarah Sackman, was pretty right when she described these attacks are an attack on Britain itself. It's probably the first time in a very, very long time that I think the Daily Express's front page has been the best of the bunch. But all of this, there is a question that underpins all of, and actually the iPaper as well, once again, manages to steer clear of the temptation to use this to grind axes and reports instead a terror attack on UK Jews foiled by police and hero bystanders. Some criticism already of some footage of the police making that arrest, but I'll tell you something, reading Mark Rowley's comments this morning about fears that he might have been a suicide bomber, and them not knowing that while he reportedly refused to show his hands, that takes some bloody bravery, doesn't it, tackling him unarmed, or tasers, or all that they had. That takes some bravery. I hope there are medals being forged as we speak for the police officers who undertook these actions, and I presume that they will be spared any criticism from anybody vaguely sensible or decent, because that is something that you don't imagine yourself being capable of doing. That's running towards danger, but leaping on it with no thought for your own personal safety, but thoughts only for the safety of the community. So, 20 minutes after 10 is the time. The question is this. What would help? What would help? What would help dial down the movements or the feeling? I don't know what the word is, actually, because you really are conscious, or I am at a time like this. I am so conscious of the line, the wall between excuse and explanation. We will obviously accommodate explanation. I will accommodate no excusing whatsoever. But what can be done? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. What actually, genuinely, seriously can be done? Short term, middle term, or long term? Personal, political, or societal? How do we turn around this hideous juggernaut of anti-Semitism and steer it back towards happier, though imperfect, times? Your thoughts on that, please, on 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
I've just had a thought. My home needs to feel less student with one teaspoon and more a home that actually feels like me.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. I'm thinking of that one statement piece that changes the whole room, or maybe just those perfect finishing touches that pull it all together.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair app.
Noticed a change in your hearing? We'll get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
3, 2, 1, 0% APR on an all-electric Mini Cooper.
What was that, Luton?
Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term.
OK, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today. Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 23 minutes after 10, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Just a little postscript to a postscript, if you like that. Rather fascinating and deeply insightful article by David Aronovich that I was sharing with you earlier. If you don't subscribe to his Substack, the piece without the postscript appeared in Jewish News last week. But it is to the question of the future that we turn. I mean, are there lessons to be drawn from the past? I honestly don't know. But I do know this. There is a heat to anti-Semitism. The omnipresent hatred is currently there's a heat to it that is higher than it has been. And I mean, almost certainly that temperature started rising in the aftermath of the October the 7th terror attack by Hamas and the increasingly disproportionate response of the Israeli regime. I think it would be remiss and deeply wrong to gloss over that or to ignore that. But on another level, it doesn't matter. Because if our job, our task, our mission is to dial down the heat, then by all means nod towards possible sources of it, but focus on the temperature and its necessary reduction. Or, as ever on this programme, tell me that I've got everything upside down and wrong and that we should be doing something completely different instead. Tony's in Finchley. Tony, what would you like to say?
Yes, I might be echoing a few of your points earlier, but I just wanted to say, you asked the question of what needs to be done, and this is something I've written to and I've spoken to Sarah Sackman about quite a few times.
That's the MP for the area. That's the MP for Golders Green, for people who don't know.
Yep. And I've written to the chief rabbi, who's based in Finchley as well.
Yeah.
I wrote a letter to him 2 weeks ago saying, unless you take action to stop the conflation, there will be a deadly anti-Semitic attack. It will increase. So what I think we need to do, and this has been something that's been building for decades.
Yes.
But I would correct you on one minor point.
And of course.
Is something, a narrative that just seems to have got through unchallenged, is that anti-Semitism started to grow again following the attacks. As if somebody... It's not like people said, oh, gosh, there's just been the most horrific attack, a murder of innocent Jews. That makes me feel anti-Semitic.
Yes.
What started it was the... When people started seeing bombing of hospitals and these images everywhere of dead Palestinian children... And what do we see from Jewish leaders? No condemnation. Time and time again, they will not condemn it. They're supporting Israel. And they will not accept that, you know, pretty much since 73, 82, Israel's been getting more and more right wing, more and more expansionist, more and more aggressive. Like you say, this...
But just to clarify, you're a Jewish man yourself.
Yes, not that it should matter, but
well,
yeah.
it matters a bit. I think there's things that you can say that other people would receive a different kind of criticism for saying. I think you might you run the risk of being accused of being a self-hating Jew rather than an anti-Semite.
Oh, yeah, I get that
a lot. but you are teetering on a tightrope, Tony.
Yes,
of the distinction between excuse and explanation, because you know there is no excuse for the events that we saw in Golders Green yesterday, but you are providing a form of explanation by linking it to the continuing catastrophe in Gaza and of course latterly in Lebanon as well.
And what the right will say is, you're victim blaming.
Yeah.
This is how they get out of it.
Not just the right, not just the right.
Sorry,
it's a feasible allegation, isn't it?
It is, except for the fact that, firstly, the victims are never the perpetrators.
Right.
They're never the rabble risers in the media.
Sure.
But the victims are obviously the people on the street. But the fact is, like you said, people won't answer the question when you say, "What do you think you should actually do to stop anti-Semitism?"
Yeah.
Because if you say we will not tolerate anti-Semitism, if you imagine you're a Muslim and you see these horrific videos, you see what Israel's doing, you know it's terrible. You see all the Muslim leaders condemning Muslim extremism.
Mm.
And by the way, I said to your producer, I said I previously when Corbyn made the comparison of Israel with ISIS, I thought that was very wrong.
So did I.
Now I'm afraid we have to accept Israel is a rogue state run by right-wing extremists.
Okay, so what would happen? Every rabbi in the country would come out and condemn Benjamin Netanyahu, or the board of deputies would stop suspending people for writing to the Financial Times in condemnation of Israel, and you think that some of the warped minds currently fermenting hatred would be helped to a place where they could separate the Jewish diaspora from the current Israeli regime?
Yeah, and the British Board of Deputies, by the way, they were never Zionists. They were against Zionism.
I'm going to take your word for this. I don't have the history.
This is old history, and you might arguably say they were wrong. Mm. But their attitudes: we represent the Jews in our community, and that's what the rabbi needs to do.
Well, what if support for Israel is very high among the Jewish community in this country, then we're in the worst of all imaginable worlds.
Well, then, yeah, and that's what depresses me most. But again, it's education, because as long as you keep saying things, you know, conflating anti-Semitism with opposition to what Israel's doing, and you rightly said Zionism is a term that's almost lost its meaning because it's changed.
And it means so many different things to so many different people.
Well, exactly. Your friend's letter said, you know, it is essentially the desire for a homeland of the Jewish state. It's a nationalism. But nationalism takes on different meanings when you have a state.
Of course it does.
And Israel, unfortunately, has not come to terms with its treatment of the Palestinians. And, you know, I mean, somebody said like 30 years ago, if you want to become left-wing in Israel, you just maintain your position, you know.
Mm.
And it's been moving further and further that way.
Is there anything, I don't want to sound silly, but, I mean, is there anything easier that can be done in the shorter term? Because what you're calling for is more than turning around an oil tanker, isn't it? It's like a sort of extra, just an entire sea change among thousands and thousands of people, but in the shorter term, in terms of what a government can do, because that's what all the opportunistic politicians whose own parties are riddled with allegations and examples of anti-Semitism, but suddenly discover a deep love for the Jewish community at times like this.
Like Farage.
Yes, exactly that. But they're all calling for the government to do something, or the authority. Can you put anything on that list?
Well, firstly, I'd say do something different. Because what they've done so far hasn't worked. Secondly, it's partly sort of wishful thinking, but you say, I said to Sarah Sackman, she, by the way, she's very, you know, in many ways she's great, and she says Netanyahu is evil, is a hideous human being. And I said, well, we'll shout it from the rooftops instead of saying we've got to ban.
Again, I'm taking your word for that. I haven't seen that myself, but I'm just clarifying that.
But my point is, the response from Labour is ban Palestine Action Committee. What message do you think that sends out? You can't ban anti-Semitism, and by trying to single it out as something that deserves some special attention, all you are going to do is increase the divide, particularly here where we've got a very high Muslim community and a large Jewish community. We need to have, the leaders need to bridge that gap whilst it's being divided. The rabbi should be on his way right now and talking to all the imams and working out what we can do together. Some kind of joint statement. You know, if the Pope condemns Trump, nobody says the Pope is anti. Well, Trump was supposed to probably say he's anti-American, you know. But unless we, you know, ram it home that what Israel is doing is contrary to all Jewish values, and as many people in Israel are saying, then the problem will get worse.
And you've covered an awful lot of ground and you've garnered an awful lot of positive response. I'm interested in what a negative response would look like. I'm interested in how anybody could think anything, or why people would think, or anybody would think, that anything Tony has said is problematic or controversial. And that is what we do together every morning. Not every morning, sometimes the territory is rather lighter, but that we dig into this stuff, and you're welcome to do that now. Tony, thank you. You've taken me a little late for the news, but I can hardly blame you for that, given that I managed to do it unaided almost every day. The number you need, 03456060973. Lottie Morley has your headlines.
The Home Secretary has rejected calls for pro-Palestine marches to be banned after an attack on two Jewish men in North London. The independent reviewer of terrorism legislation has called for a moratorium on the protests. Shabana Mahmood has told LBC she doesn't think the UK is at that point yet. Water companies have been accused of sticking two fingers up after LBC uncovered thousands of delays in reporting illegal pollution incidents. Some firms took more than a year to disclose that they had been responsible for pollutants entering Britain's waterways. And 10 people have now been arrested in connection with allegations of sexual offences and modern slavery in Crewe. Members of the Ahmadi religion of peace and light were detained when properties were raided yesterday. LBC weather, cloudy in the southwest with some scattered showers, dry and fine elsewhere, a high of 23.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
It's that summer escape kind of feeling, as everyone finds their happy place. A celebratory drink, a taste of something new, a quiet retreat to the lounge. Because with P&O Ferries, that holiday feeling doesn't wait until you arrive. It starts the moment you step on board. P&O Ferries from Dover to Calais. Summer's calling. Book now at poferries.com. Travel without the travel.
It's hard to concentrate when you're worried about your health. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
At AXA Health Insurance, we build our teams with people who care. So when you need us, we're here to support you. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. Pre-existing conditions are not covered.
Notice the change in your hearing? We'll get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:37. I mean, I am interested in how anybody might think that having a ban on the pro... And, of course, it will be the people that are usually screaming blue murder about threats to freedom of speech. But would banning marches, pro-Palestine marches... I suppose punishing tens of thousands of entirely blameless people for the actions of a tiny minority on those marches, unless you know otherwise. But how would that dial down feelings of anti-Semitism? I would actually like to know, because what we're trying to do today is assemble a list of things that might reasonably be done. Tony went off-piste a bit, because the way I'd set the question up was to ask what the government might reasonably do. But I may have failed to take my own medicine here while dispensing it to you, because I am now being led by the nose by the kind of opportunistic politicians and media figures that I opened the programme by describing. People, I mean, Farage is there, as a photograph just popped in front of me, a man who still hasn't accounted for the fact that so many of his Jewish contemporaries at Dulwich College report that they remember him calling for Jews to be gassed and insisting that Hitler was right, and some of them even claiming he would sing Nazi songs while marching through the Kent countryside. But there he is, looking very, very concerned. Lucy Conley, a woman who literally called for a pogrom in this country and got jailed for it, given a hero's welcome on stage at his conference. If you think you can separate these things, and you think that the temperature of anti-Semitism isn't a reflection of other hatreds as well, then I'd love to hear from you. You can, a couple of messages coming in, insisting that we have to close the mosques. all the mosques, which, of course, makes you wonder where those people's politics lie. Luckily, there's a button I can press to see the history of messages sent to this radio station. I can work out exactly where your politics lie. And it isn't a surprise, but it is a reflection of the fact that you can have a politician doing the broadcast rounds this morning who joined a party led by a man whose teenage anti-Semitism was absolutely off the charts. So I fell into the trap, perhaps, because that is what they're all called. The government must do more. How can we blame Sadiq Khan for what has happened in Golders Green, despite the fact that he's done more for intra and inter-community relations than pretty much any other politician in the country? How can we blame Sadiq Khan? How can we blame Keir Starmer, who is married to a Jewish woman? How can we label him anti-Semitic and tar him? And that is, tragically, the first thing that pops into the heads of some people in politics and the media when a horror like the one inflicted in Golders Green yesterday begins to unfold. So maybe it's the wrong question, but I would like to hear answers to it. When people call, whether in good faith or bad, when people call for more to be done, what does more actually look like? Because at the moment, I'm only really hearing calls for marches undertaken in the massive majority by people expressing nothing other than concern, sympathy for and solidarity with the victims of genocide in Gaza. That's all these marches are for. So what does more? More must be done. Something must be done. What does something look like? 0345 6060 973. 10:40 is the time. Gary is also in Finchley. Gary, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi. Good morning, James.
Hello, Gary.
Thanks for getting me on. Yes. So, I think I am going to disagree with Tony, and I'm going to put together hopefully an argument that will enlighten a little bit. I think that the UK has a broader problem than anti-Semitism. And the problem is that, and I'm not a reform supporter at all, The problem could be solved if, let's imagine, every morning my kids went to school and in front of their school was a Union Jack and they sang God Save the King. And let's imagine that at the next school there was a Union Jack and that was a Muslim school and they sang God Save the King, irrespective of whether or not they care about God or irrespective of whether or not they care about the King. And imagine that every Christian school, every non-Christian school, every atheist, their kids went to school and they sang God Save the King. If we have
what about the Republicans?
How
do you think this would help? I'm not averse to the idea, although, as you've already acknowledged, these kind of ideas are often hijacked pretty quickly by the sort of foot soldiers of fascism. But how would it work?
Okay. Well, how would it work in principle? So let me turn to the Republicans. The fact that there are atheists and Republicans who don't like it also has to be taken as read. You have to take something that brings society together, so that if there's a march against Israel, the next morning it's fine because we're all going to the same thing the following morning. If you have nothing whatsoever, it used to be Christianity. It used to be Christianity.
So we're looking for a commonality.
Right, and we do have a church in every single village in this country, and there's a very important point here, and it's deliberate, and I hate it, and I'm not Islamophobic, but I have to say to your show what I think is relevant. I believe it's the case that the Muslim leaders do not advocate singing "God Save the King" because it's against the religion. If you're a fundamentalist, it's certainly against the religion to say that their God is not the God that our God is, and therefore they cannot sing God Save the King.
Well, I've seen Muslim politicians joining in with the national anthem. So I'm a little uncomfortable with this slight detour that you've taken after beginning with, I think, a well-intentioned call for community harmony. You are actually maligning Muslims with little or no evidence.
No, I'm not maligning.
I've seen Muslims singing the national anthem. So what you're saying is at worst a generalisation, or rather at best.
I would say the same that all the Jewish people.
But here's my problem.
And the Republicans.
Yeah, I don't think this is a very good idea for the record. But I'm making a list, and I'm not crossing anything off it on a morning like this, because, you know, anything has got to be better than nothing. But does your solution to the problem not ignore the very roots of division and the fact that, you know, I go to or I went to a Catholic school and some people go to a Jewish school or so we've already got these divisions in place and it's all very well all singing the same song or waving at the same flag. When these divisions are entrenched from the cradle to the grave, you're never going to be able to achieve the kind of, community and homogenous spirit that you describe. But no, particularly if you disagree, if you have quite profound disagreements of faith.
Yes, but James, you said yourself, that is from the cradle to the grave. What I'm saying is if you put something else from the cradle to the grave, and it's not a thing, we don't need to believe in God to believe well, that
then,
we want
well, then I don't,
to
I just,
survive.
I mean, I'd like but you to be right. Not, I wish. Not, I just don't quite see what is going to happen in the hearts of an anti-monarchist atheist if they come to school every morning. And I mean, also, you're describing something that has been attempted in the past in history, a sort of borderline flag worship and compulsory religious observance. And also, you know, I mean, why Christianity? It's a religion with its roots in the Middle East. It's an Abrahamic religion, just like Islam and Judaism are. And the king himself, as he reminded us yesterday, has intended for some, and it only really exists, the Church of England, so that the, sort of syphilitic king, Henry VIII could marry his mistress, who he subsequently murdered. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. You're putting a lot of pressure on a rather weak structure, I would say. A potentially fragile structure. But, I mean, what else are you going to do? If we end this hour just simply concluding there's nothing really likely on this list, there's nothing substantive, there's nothing meaningful, there's nothing that is really likely to improve things, then I guess the opportunistic politicians shouting that we must do more look even more morally bankrupt than they do already. It is 10:45. I mentioned to you yesterday, and then we were overtaken by the tragedy in Golders Green, that a certain what I did was I reminded you, I think we may have even found the clip so that I can prove to you I'm not hallucinating. I said to you a few days ago to keep a very close eye on British politicians accepting largesse or donations from cryptocurrency tycoons, and I meant the parties. It didn't cross my mind for a moment that any British politicians may be in receipt of large amounts of money from cryptocurrency tycoons that can simply be described as personal gifts, like chunks of change just handed to a politician by a rich bloke. I just told you to keep an eye out for that. I had absolutely no idea, for the avoidance of doubt, I had absolutely no idea what was set to emerge in the next few days. But Aggie Chambray will join us after this to tell us what has.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Is this absolutely at the heart of the propriety that Keir Starmer said he would be bringing to the job of Prime Minister? He was going to be trustworthy. He was going to be different. He was going to be a straight shooter. And now he's whipping his MPs to make sure he doesn't have to face any more questions about what the hell went on at the appointment of a man who clearly had an ongoing friendship with a convicted paedophile billionaire.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Are you ready for the McCrispy to become your new go-to? With juicy 100% chicken breast, one bite and your usual becomes your used to. Betray your go-to for McCrispy.
McCrispy.
Now at McDonald's.
served from 11 a.m. Subject to availability.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do?
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's.
My tip is
weight loss.
I forget that.
You just keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
3, 2, sun. EasyJet's big orange sale is now on, with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. Book now at easyjet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights, sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and after protected. T's and C's apply.
Fever Tree Ginger Beer. There's no one quite like you, is there? That fiery character. Warming undertones. Mixed, you make a spirited Moscow Mule. But even on your own, you still have the most delectable kick. Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 10 to 11. Easy to call for more to be done, particularly if you are a sort of morality-free zone dedicated to opportunistic politics. Rather harder to answer the question, as we are discovering. Are you all right, Aggie Chambray?
I'm okay,
I don't know whether the microphone picked that up, but of course, if it didn't, then I'm going to sound a little odd as I express concern for your welfare. Why are you here?
I am here because Nigel Farage, in early 2024, was given a gift, not a political donation, they say, but a gift of £5 million.
Pardon?
£5 million.
£5 million.
£5 million.
A personal gift.
In early 2024. From cryptocurrency billionaire Christopher Harborne. Now, we are only just hearing about this now in 2026 because it doesn't seem to
have been declared.
£5 million.
Right.
It's not the only money Christopher Harborne has given to reform UK.
That's the company, separate. But this is just
Just to Nigel Farage in early 2024. Account. Yes. So we found this out yesterday in a couple of different ways. So it was reported by the Daily Telegraph in a long interview done with Nigel Farage, the reform UK leader.
This is after The Guardian had got in touch saying, we've got this story. So presumably.
Well, I think that's right. So The Guardian have actually said that today. So The Telegraph published it first and said in this interview that he had been firebombed. His house had been firebombed early last year in 2025, which is obviously awful. And there is a massive issue with MP security.
Of course.
And he talked about that. And he also talked about the fact that he had been given this gift of £5 million by Christopher Harborne. That was given in early 2024, before he said that he had decided that he was going to run for Parliament and return once again to politics. And a Reform UK spokesman has said this was a personal, unconditional gift that was given before he was elected. Everything has been declared in accordance with the rules. But you mentioned the Guardian story because they published a piece today talking about the timeline of them getting in touch with Reform UK on Monday morning, and Reform UK sort of putting them in touch with one person, putting them in touch with another person. Then they spoke to their lawyers. The lawyers didn't seem to come back with enough information. Yeah. And then on Wednesday morning, The Telegraph published this story with the top line. You can understand, because it's a very serious top line, that Nigel Farage's house was firebombed.
Well, what have the police had to say about this?
I don't remember
it being reported at the time.
Well, he said he reported it at the time. He said it was an outright arson attempt. He wasn't home at the time, but when he came back and opened the door, he found the damage, and the police, he says, were all over it. They did their best, but there are no suspects so far.
And have the police commented at all?
Well, the police haven't commented, but I've asked Reform UK, we don't know which home it was.
How many does he have?
We don't know how many homes he has, but of course he has,
But you don't need to know where the house is. You don't need the address or the postcode, you just need to know which force he reported it to.
We haven't got that information
I'm sure that will emerge. I'm reminded of an event from about 10 years ago when he claimed he'd been the victim of an assassination attempt while driving his Volvo in continental Europe, and claimed that the mechanic who looked at the wheel that had fallen off the cart had told him that it was an assassination attempt, or that it had clearly been sabotage. And then some French journalists tracked down the mechanic, and it turned out not only could he not speak English, but also that he entirely rejected Nigel Farage's claims that his car had been interfered with in some way, and that the mechanic had told him so. So I don't know why that popped into my mind, but it might provide some context for some of the questions. So £5 million.
And it has been reported to the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards because of that point of the fact that it wasn't declared. There are rules around, as you can imagine, very, very strict rules around declarations. The Commons Code of Conduct states that new MPs, which he, of course, was when he won in Clacton in 2024, must register all their current financial interests, any registrable benefits other than earnings received in the 12 months before their election within 1 month of their election. Unless, of course, it is a personal gift. But effectively, if you're in doubt about that, then declare it. Reform UK are saying that this was a personal gift. But as I say, the Conservatives have referred this to a guy called Daniel Greenberg, who's the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standard, and they are asking him to look into it because no such £5 million payment was declared by Nigel Farage.
Why would anybody give anybody £5 million? I don't know. But I suppose we can all be thankful that there was no suit or spectacle involved, because if there was, some people would be in a state of high dudgeon about this. What's the date today, Aggie?
The date today is the 30th of April 2026.
Would you like to hear a clip from this programme exactly 1 week ago today?
Yes.
If I were you, I would keep a very, very close eye on politicians cozying up to Bitcoin companies or to cryptocurrency companies. We've already seen in the United States some extremely sharp practice. But any UK politicians... the sooner any government introduces legislation to ban donations via cryptocurrency to political parties, or indeed the retention of the services of politicians by cryptocurrency companies, I'd watch that very, very closely, because the examples of collusion between government and private corporation to minimize regulation, to protect consumers, is at the absolute heart of so many of the worst things that can happen to societies.
That is a complete coincidence, and it didn't even occur to me that we may be discussing the existence of an enormous sum of money be transferred from a cryptocurrency tycoon to an individual politician. I always presumed it would be a political donation to a party when I made that warning exactly 1 week ago. But you can call me Nostradamus if you want. What will happen next on this on this story? I mean, are you required to pay tax on a gift from a Thailand-based tycoon?
No, you're not required to pay tax on that. I would imagine, well, I imagine what we'll hear next is whether or not Daniel Greenberg, who is the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards, will launch an investigation into this and will look at it. Reform UK are very much saying that they've done nothing wrong. They're saying the fact that he got this gift in 2024 and then decided to stand for Parliament is totally, entirely unrelated. The gift was given when Nigel was retired from frontline politics. A while after the gift was given, Nigel confirmed he wouldn't stand at the next general election. He then reversed his decision to stand in June.
Interesting chronology. And we will await the confirmation of which force it was that investigated this arson attack as well. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. For that, we can all be grateful. Aggie Chambray, thank you very much indeed. 10:57 is the time. Back to the question of what can be done to make Jewish people in the United Kingdom safer. Like, what can realistically be done? Because it is an irresistible sense this morning among good people that something should be. There are, of course, plenty of bad people using it for their own ends. A few people asking me, for example, why Sadiq Khan hasn't condemned these attacks.
I'm angry, I'm appalled, I'm disgusted. The Jewish people are going to bed frightened. They're waking up frightened. They're living their lives frightened. This is no way to live.
It is 10:58. Let's go to Henry, who's in Boreham Wood on this. Henry, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
I just wanted to sort of offer a slightly nuanced view compared to Tony, because my constant fear, first of all, I think conflating Zionism and Judaism is a very dangerous thing. And I think the belief in a Jewish homeland is fair. given that every other major religion has a homeland. And I don't think that distinction is ever made clear enough in the media that there is an entitlement to this. And I think that when you are fully entitled to criticise a government, but to then label that whole government as the Jewish people and Israelis as agreeing with that, is also, it's naive, and it makes it oversimplifies.
I agree with you completely, but I am required to point out that the Israeli government does it all the time. So Netanyahu cites biblical justification for some of the things that he does, and always justifies his, what I will choose to call atrocities, by claiming that he is protecting all Jewish people, the Jewish people in Israel. He does that, and that for me is as bad as anybody else doing it.
Sure, and I think that is, you know, that's a fair comment, but he is an elected leader, but there are many millions of people in Israel who don't agree with him and think far differently. And so you are painting everyone in Israel with the same viewpoint. And I think my point...
I'm not, but people who make this conflation are. I'm categorically not. My problem is with Netanyahu's regime, Itamar Ben-Gvir, Smotrich, and these people that even Netanyahu wouldn't have... shared a table with a few years ago, but has been forced to bring into the fold in order to keep himself in power. But yes, it's a hideous conflation, but how can you unconflate it, do you think?
Okay, and the one point I wanted to add to what Tony was saying is that I think people have to accept that there is an existential threat on Israel from its neighbours who are, within their own charter, there to dismantle and destroy Israel. So it's a very unique position for people to be in, where you are having the Houthis, Hezbollah, Hamas and Iran, all who want to destroy Israel. And so it's not like there is this perfect world that they're living in, that Israel's retaliating in such a way. I don't agree with what everything that's happening by any stretch, but I don't think that's quite clear when people view Israel's actions as to what threat they are constantly under. What I would do, I personally think, because, again, I believe there is a right to protest and to be pro-Palestinian, that is absolutely legitimate. But if you go on these marches, there's a severe anti-Semitic, a lot of anti-Semitism and anti-Israel. And so...
Well, hang on, they're two very, very different things. So what have you... I mean, this isn't a gotcha question. I'm not going to insist that you provide photographic evidence or anything like that. But I mean, being anti-Israel when Israel is embarked upon its current course of action in Gaza doesn't seem to me to be controversial, albeit that the point you make about the existential threat that Israel lives under. What is the anti-Semitism? I mean, how do we get a proper handle?
Because when you see anti-Trump rallies, you don't see, or anti anyone, it's anti that person or anti that ruler. You don't just get...
Actually, I've had accusations recently that opposing Donald Trump's war in Iran is evidence of anti-Semitism, but that's possibly peculiar to my rather strange existence.
But you can criticise Netanyahu and his actions without bringing every Jewish person into
which is the difference between anti-Israel. Israel can be used as a byword for the current regime. When people talk about Britain, they're talking about the government. But a distinction I always prefer to add the word regime or administration or the names of the people in it, because I think it's clearer. But I don't think people who you would typify as being anti-Israel are anti-Semitic. That's a conflation that we're supposed to be resisting. But I mean, because you're nudging towards the idea of calling for the marches to be proscribed, I think. Are you?
No, I actually want them to be, I think, where there is clear anti-Semitism.
Better regulated.
Better regulated.
Yes, I'd agree with that.
People have a right to protest what's going on, even if you agree or disagree. But it's the way and the narrative of, you know, burning Israeli flags with the Star of David on it, which is very closely linked to all of Judaism, it kind of makes...
But these things are already regulated. I mean, that example would already be regulated.
Sure, but you see these like the Israeli flag in the bin and, you know, blood libel, you know, all these classic blood libels of bleeding, you know, people eating babies. These are like century-old tropes against Jewish people.
I haven't seen those.
I'm on LinkedIn a lot, and I get tons and tons and tons of information. And I appreciate that's because that's more centred to what my algorithm shows me.
Of course, but I mean you would probably agree that much of the UK media is historically very sympathetic towards whatever administration is in place in Israel and very committed, at least ostensibly, to battling anti-Semitism. And if people are spotted on these marches with, you know, I forget the precise examples, but with offensive insignia or offensive glyphs and signs, I'm aware of them being arrested. I keep hearing people saying, calling them hate marches or claiming that they're riddled with anti-Semitic imagery, and I think we probably need more proof of that.
I mean, we all agree that the chants, like from the river to the sea, those are very, very...
But it's in Likud's founding document, that phrase.
Okay. I mean, look, can I just say one of the things that I would like to see happen?
Of course, but just respond to the point I just made, because I do understand that that is a very upsetting phrase for people, but I think often they don't realise that it's a phrase that has been used in that political environment by pretty much everybody at various points in history.
Well, I appreciate that, and perhaps my naivety, I wasn't aware of that, so I appreciate that.
Okay. So what else might help?
I think, and you see it in our institutions and the universities, and it's across America as well, there has been that's where a lot of this sort of liberal anti-Semitism comes from, and I think there needs to be done more at those stages where people are being educated to make it a clearly more nuanced point.
I think we probably all need a bit of education on what the difference is between being anti this regime and I describe myself as being anti-genocide and being anti-Semitic, because the conflation is being undertaken by an awful lot of people.
Yeah, and when you see this boycott Israel, boycott this, it doesn't actually help what the problem is.
No, I agree with you.
So, people are very quick to jump on the bandwagon and put anti-Semitic things in Tesco's on the Jewish products, but that doesn't help what the actual problem is.
But I'm with you on this. I think the first thing everybody should do is really drill down into the difference between being opposed to the actions of the current Israeli regime and indulging in ancient hatred. The problem is that the phrase anti-Semitism has been so widely applied to people who are doing nothing but criticize or condemn the Israeli regime, that the blurring, and of course, Benjamin Netanyahu will be very quick to typify anyone criticizing him as being, or his actions as being anti-Semitic. So the blurring is coming from every single angle. And those of us who dream, perhaps naively, of peace and harmony probably need to work harder to pin down precisely what that distinction or what that difference is. Henry, thank you. You made me very late for this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Home Secretary has rejected calls for pro-Palestine marches to be banned after an attack on two Jewish men in North London. The independent reviewer of terrorism legislation has called for a moratorium on the protests. Jonathan Hall also called anti-Semitism in the UK a national emergency. But Shamana Mahmood has told LBC she doesn't think the UK is at that point yet.
I always take seriously what Jonathan Hall is saying. He is the independent reviewer of terror legislation. I think that a national emergency would mean that we suspend elements of our democracy. I don't think we are there yet. I think we need to strike a better balance between the freedom to protest,
so
but also the freedom of people to be able to go about their business. If the marches continue, they do so with greater police powers that have just hit the statute books.
The government has announced extra funding to keep Jewish communities safe after the stabbing in Golders Green yesterday. The Prime Minister has said the criminal justice system must respond to the attack in a swift, agile and visible way. Water companies have been accused of failing to protect the environment after LBC uncovered thousands of delays to the reporting of pollution incidents. We found dozens of cases where firms took more than a year to come forward to say they were responsible for pollutants entering our waterways. Liberal Democrats' environment spokesperson Tim Farron says LBC's data shows self-reporting isn't working.
So it looks like the water companies are obviously sticking two fingers up at the people and at Parliament, saying you can try and regulate us, but we'll carry on doing what we like. And that gets, I think, to the heart of the problem. Yes, it's disgusting that you've got sewage being put into our lakes, our waters and our seas. But it's also a sign of people who are very powerful realising they can get away with something and then doing it anyway. So it's morally wrong as well as environmentally awful.
One of London's busiest train stations has been evacuated because of a suspected gas leak. British Transport Police say a small number of passengers at Farringdon have reported feeling unwell. Underground and Thames Link services are not calling at the station. The King and Queen will begin the final day of their US state visit later. They're due to arrive back at the White House after their trip to New York. Charles and Camilla were there to lay flowers at the 9/11 memorial. And the Bank of England is expected to hold interest rates at 3.75% this lunchtime, despite the war in Iran pushing up inflation. Today's economic forecasts are the first published since the conflict began at the end of February. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 92 points at 10,305. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy with some showers in the southwest this afternoon, staying dry and bright elsewhere with a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom at 4LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Did you say need anything from Tesco? I'm glad you mentioned it. How about free fruit and veg for schools? That's right, Fruit Giant. We want to help a million school kids get fruit and veg for free. Nailed it. Tesco. Every little helps.
Tesco is providing funding to schools to buy fruit and veg through its free fruit and veg for schools and community grant programs. 1 million ambition is from April 2026 to July 2029. Visit tescoplc.com/schools.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 10 minutes after 11. I would like to stay with this, and I think I don't want to be, what's the word that I want, prescriptive on days like this. I think it's interesting to take all angles, all calls, and all ideas, even if they're not immediately addressing the question that I'm asking. But if I could nudge you at all, I would nudge you towards meaningful suggestions about what could be done better. The Prime Minister is meeting with criminal justice agencies at Downing Street, and they will be coming up with or at least conversing about things that can be done. And that's what I would like to do. Now, Mystery Hour, of course, scheduled for 12, so a guarantee of light relief on the horizon. But this is a really important conversation because I don't like people who shout something must be done from the sidelines. What I like is people who say this would work or this could be done. The problem is, and I say this with the greatest of love, that when you start trying to assemble things like that, you often end up with some fairly ridiculous suggestions. Which I think I can fairly describe the idea that we all sing the national anthem and raise a union flag at every school in the country as a fairly ridiculous suggestion, not in the context necessarily of everything, but in the context of reducing anti-Semitism. I can't quite see how that would be any help, or as an earlier caller suggested. And of course, that fetishization of flags and religion is often goes hand in hand with forms of fascism. But what might work? 03456060973 is the number that you will need. I think we'll listen to everything that Keir Starmer has had to say on the subject in the last few minutes.
Can I just say thank you to you all for coming in at short notice for this really important discussion about criminal justice in the aftermath of an appalling attack last night in Golders Green, a terror attack in Golders Green. It is important that we come together very quickly now to take the necessary action. What we saw last night was people being targeted because they are Jewish. And absolutely clear about that. And, of course, our thoughts are with the victims and wishing them a speedy recovery with their families and loved ones. And, of course, with the volunteers, the first responders, who were quite incredible in their response yesterday. But there's no getting away from the fact that this was not a one-off. This has been a series of attacks on our Jewish community, particularly in recent weeks. And there is a very deep sense of anxiety, of concern about security, about safety, about identity, frankly. I went to Kenton Synagogue last week and heard firsthand from some in the synagogue who, of course, have been subject to an attack there. So we have to understand that wider impact and that visceral feeling that many in our Jewish community have. And we have to be really clear that an attack on our Jewish community is an attack on all of us, and we have to approach it in that way. Now, yesterday, as you probably saw, I chaired a COBRA meeting, which some around the table were at. That was dealing predominantly with our immediate response and how we coordinate that response, but also about what enhanced security and other measures need to go in place. And we've already got enhanced funding in place. That's been in for some time, but we're uplifting that, as has been announced this morning. We are fast-tracking legislation to deal with malign state actors, and of course we must absolutely deal with the root causes of both anti-Semitism and extremism. But today is about part of the response, which is really important, which is the criminal justice response, because a number of people have been arrested, a number are going through the criminal justice system, and it's really important that we are able collectively to demonstrate that the response will be swift and visible. And that's why I wanted to get you around the table today. I do recognise and respect the various independence that's carried by people around the table. I understand it. I respect it. We can operate within that framework. But I do think there's a wider duty on all of us in terms of the confidence in the criminal justice system to be able to deal with appalling attacks like this, to show that it can act in a swift, agile and visible way. And I look forward to a discussion with you as to how we make that happen. I want to make a wider point here, because it's often said after an attack like that, a terror attack, an appalling attack, an anti-Semitic attack last night, it's often said that we stand with our Jewish community. Well, we do stand with our Jewish community, of course we do. But it's our fight as well. It's the fight of everyone in this country, because it's about what sort of a country that we want to live in. So yes, we stand with, we support our Jewish community, of course we do, but we've got to make this a bigger fight. It is a fight for what we believe is the kind of country that we ought to and want to live in. So this is our fight, and it's really important, I think, that we broaden it in that way.
11:15 is the time. I don't actually, I mean, besides the usual biases and footballifications, I don't understand why some people are attacking Keir Starmer personally on this issue. And I wish in some ways it was possible to have a conversation about anti-Semitism in this country without having a conversation about the broader issues in the Middle East, in Israel and beyond. But I personally don't think it is possible. And so you just have to conclude that the people trying to malign Keir Starmer, whose children I think are being raised as Jews, as being somehow an enemy of the Jewish people, are a result of the conflation that underpins almost every turn in these conversations, doesn't it? It is people who are furious with Keir Starmer for, there's plenty of people on the left who are furious with Keir Starmer for being too supportive of Benjamin Netanyahu's government's actions. But of course there are plenty of people on the right, who, well, certainly thought until relatively recently that he should have been even more supportive of, Benjamin Netanyahu's government's actions. And until, I suppose, the reality of the horror show in Iran began to become undeniable to all but the most dishonest contributors. My friend with whose message I opened the programme this morning, the person who I told you has decided not to take their young son to a Hebrew playgroup in North London for the first time. That was due to happen this weekend and is now not going to happen. They also point out, and I won't paraphrase this, I'll read their words entirely, that Netanyahu is desperately trying to promote a narrative in which a change in the Iranian regime could have been possible if lazy Europeans had joined his and Trump's just war. The words lazy and Trump and just are in quotes there. And there is a cautious suggestion that it serves his narrative that nowhere other than Israel is safe for Jews, although, of course, there are attacks on Jews on the streets of Israel as well. 18 minutes after 11 is the time. So Keir Starmer announces that they are pooling resources to come up with ideas. The government is doing, at 11 o'clock this morning, exactly what we started doing at 10 o'clock this morning. And if we're completely honest, we haven't come up with much, have we, about what could be done differently to make Jewish people in Britain both be and feel safer. Your thoughts, please, on 0345 6060 973.
Hear every side of the story. LBC.
What do you value most?
Reliability.
Quality family time.
My social life.
With Wi-Fi to keep you entertained and fares capped at £3, travelling with Metrobus gives you the time and freedom to enjoy what matters to you. Download the Metrobus app today for tickets, journey planning and live updates. Better. Wherever you're heading, it's better by bus. Better by
bus. Tombola Arcade here to settle it once and for all. Being happy for your mate winning versus actually winning. Ah, the age-old battle. Sure, we should support our mates. And celebrating their wins is pretty sweet. But you know what's even sweeter? Winning yourself. Up the leaderboard you go. Hello, smugness, my old friend. Sometimes we just need to let fun win. Play slots, casino, and instant win games you won't find anywhere else. Download Tombola Arcade now for fun's sake. 18 plus, gambleaware.org.
With the bank holiday coming up, I need the garden to feel less forgotten patch of grass and more ready for the first barbecue, even if it rains.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
I'm dreaming of a shiny new barbecue, a dining set that fits everyone, and maybe an outdoor rug to make it feel like a proper room.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair app.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 11 is the time. What the government of Israel does reflects on us as Jews and reflects on our Judaism. Therefore, it is our Jewish obligation to be in dialogue with that in some way. And another contribution, if you like, to the conflation conversation, and that comes from Rabbi Josh Levy, who co-leads a progressive Judaism in this country, a newly formed movement representing around a third of synagogues in the UK. And they warned yesterday that Israel's current political direction risks becoming incompatible with Jewish values, while insisting that criticism of the country's government is a Jewish obligation rather than an act of disloyalty. Of course, it's not that long ago that the Board of Deputies of British Jews suspended members who wrote to the Financial Times newspaper to criticise the country's government. So, look, if it's confusing to talk about Zionism, and it really is a very tricky word to use because it means so many different things to so many different people, most obviously, if you're keeping up to date with Israeli politics, most obviously the fact that both Itamar Ben-Gvir and Yair Gallant describe themselves as Zionists, despite not really agreeing about anything except the right of Israel to exist, which is what I used to take the word to mean. But of course, it means something very different to very many people now. But even here, you know, if you've got an organisation that represents around a third of synagogues in the UK calling for criticism of Israel as a Jewish obligation rather than an act of disloyalty, while one of the biggest Jewish organisations in the country suspends members for writing a letter to the Financial Times. It's not exactly stochastic terrorism, is it? Writing a letter to the Financial Times condemning Israel. So you can't even talk about a Jewish community or a Jewish position on questions like this. The only thing upon which we can all agree, and if you don't agree with me on this, I would, actually not even politely, I would violently encourage you to find something else to do with your mornings, unless you think you're possibly capable of seeing the light. The only thing upon which we must all agree is that Jewish people in this country currently face a unique threat, whether you see it as an exacerbation of a constant or whether you see it as a new dimension of an ancient hatred is frankly moot. It is a unique threat. And the question of what can be done to minimize, ameliorate or dilute that threat is the one that we need to try at least to answer. And we will continue to do that with the help of Mark in Manchester. Mark, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. How are you doing today?
I'm all good, mate. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, I do have a suggestion on how things can improve, but First of all, I just want to say a little bit about how frustrating it is, as you know, to be a British Jew fighting anti-Semitism in this country, which is, I think, is unique to the Jewish community. So everything that we do or suggest is always used to fight against us. So when we have terrible incidents like yesterday, you'll see things like people saying that the government needs to spend more money on security and healthcare for the Jewish communities. And then you have people attacking us saying, why are the Jews getting more money when they're that rich? And then when we actually have our own healthcare with the ambulances and security services, people are saying, why do they have their own security services and ambulances when they're not helping everybody else? And then the worst of all is...
I'm going to just stop you quickly there, because, I mean, as far as I'm aware, they do help anybody else who is in the relevant area.
But what I'm saying is that everything that we suggest is used against us.
Yes.
We have people, we have our ex-football heroes who we've all, as British and English Jews, who we love and celebrated and spent our money on cheering, we see them calling us rats. And then they're forgiven. And people on the radio, even on national radio, are calling what happened in Gaza a genocide, when we know what a genocide is.
Well, the International Criminal Court is sitting on that, and so are many human rights. Many human rights organisations in Israel and beyond are calling it a genocide. And,
exactly,
and of course, Benjamin, Benjamin Netanyahu faces arrest. So the first point you made, which I thought was really powerful, because those are
It's all linked. It's not one or the other, James.
Well, then you're conflating Israel with Judaism.
So why shouldn't I, as a Jew, be proud of Israel? Why are you saying to
because
me...
Because they killed 75,000 Palestinians. How can you be proud of that?
I'm not proud of that. I'm proud of I'm proud of Israel for fighting for the safety of me and my brethren. When we're not safe in this country, we've got national radio presenters.
And that's fine. But nobody's criticising you for that. Nobody's criticising you for that. But people are allowed to disagree with you. And also, I mean, you referenced Gary Lineker there, who was absolutely mortified. I've spoken to him about this personally, when that image of the rat appeared.
He hasn't stopped spreading.
No, he criticises Israel. And you can't be calling for a silencing of criticism. What is it, then?
He's spreading propaganda against the Jewish people. It's not about Israel.
You're going to have to provide an
art.
You're going to have to provide an example of that.
I think that one incident is enough. I don't think you would allow that to happen to anybody else. You're holding Nigel Farage accountable for something that happened 40 years ago that he may or may not have said at school.
Well, I've spoken to the people. I've spoken to the people that he said it to. But I don't understand what criticism, and I've spoken to Gary Lineker as well, so I've spoken to the people at the heart of both of these stories.
Fair enough.
And you haven't.
Thank you. Okay, fair enough, thank you.
So what is it that you want people to be prevented from doing? Because nobody thinks you should be posting images that contain pictures of rats. Yeah. What is it that you think? Well, actually, given that I read it out just before you came on air, how do you respond to the comments yesterday from Rabbi Josh Levy? What the government of Israel does reflects on us as Jews and reflects on our Judaism. Therefore, it is our Jewish obligation to be in dialogue with that in some way. And him and his co-founder, Rabbi Charlie Baginski, went on to say that the current actions of the Israeli state, Israel's political direction, not only threatened the future of Israel, but also posed a threat to Judaism itself. Do you think he should be allowed to say things like that?
I don't think that's anti-Semitic. I don't think he's calling Jews rats or comparing.
Nobody's defending that. Nobody's defending calling Jews
online.
Nobody's defending calling Jews rats.
You have.
I haven't. It's disgusting. No, I've told you he did it by accident, and he's accounted and atoned for it.
In the great
context, we're talking about two people who got stabbed in Golders Green yesterday, and we're wondering what we can do to stop that happening again.
Can I make a suggestion for that, then?
Yes.
So, ironically, one of the most, probably one of the safest places to live now as a Jew, because it's not this country, because we've seen what we have in national radio presenters and TV stars. It's not this country anymore. One of the most safest places that you can live, unbelievably, ironically, is Dubai, which it was not a safe place for a Jew to even visit 20 years ago.
So your suggestion as to what can be done to make things safer here?
So, yes. So, if I go to Dubai, what have they done over the past 20 years? And probably similar in Saudi Arabia.
This is Sharia law. So, you're calling for Sharia law?
No, that's not what I'm saying. If you let me finish, I will tell you.
I will.
So, what they've done... they've prescribed terrorist organisations such as the IRGC, and they have...
How will that make Jewish people here safer?
If I can explain. If you see, in Dubai, in Saudi, they have got a very, very strict policy on extremism within their own mosques and Islamic education. They've rid all of that. In Dubai, you cannot wave a Palestinian flag. You can't go on the streets shouting, globalise the intifada. You can't shout river to the sea. They know what that means. They don't have white little liberals who defend them and pretend and turn the blind eye to what actually it means and say, oh, they're just peaceful, there's just one or two people. We know what it means. We've been crying out for the past 3 years saying, look, we're not safe in our streets. People are calling for our blood.
I need to speak because we're going to run out of time.
What that means.
What is it that you think the British government could learn specifically from the Saudi Arabian regime?
I think if we're being very honest, which I know a lot of people aren't, we need to look where the violent anti-Semitism comes from. Not the rhetoric,
but just before the news, from the Saudi Arabian regime, what could Keir Starmer learn?
They need to learn that they need to go into the mosques and actually work with the Islamic leaders and rid the horrendous, evil,
I mean, you're calling for Britain to be more like Saudi Arabia?
In that aspect, yes.
Okay. I mean, it's a view, and I'll definitely put it on the list. Thank you, Mark. You cannot publicly practice certain religions, I don't think, in Saudi Arabia. In fact, actually, before you go, Mark, you can't publicly practice Judaism in Saudi Arabia.
But that's not what I'm praising them about. You're allowed to say one thing's good and the other thing's bad.
Okay, but just to make sure that you know that.
If I wanted to live in Saudi Arabia, I'd move to Saudi Arabia.
You can't move any religion other than Islam in Saudi Arabia. So, listen, you're clearly very emotional, and it's an interesting suggestion. But it's important that I remind my listeners and possibly inform them for the first time that you're suggesting the British government could learn something about making Jews safer by copying some of the tactics of a government that doesn't allow Jewish people to practice Judaism mate, that's bonkers, isn't it? It just is. You can't publicly worship as a Jew in Saudi Arabia, which of course is what Nick Timothy thinks should happen to Muslims here, but I'm happy to disagree with both of those positions and reject out of hand the idea that it's something that we should be contemplating introducing even mere elements of in this country. I apologise if I've misunderstood you, but that's absolutely crackers. 11:30 is the time. Lottie Morley has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer says an attack on our Jewish community is an attack on all of us. The Prime Minister has been meeting with criminal justice agencies in Downing Street after a double stabbing in Golders Green. Two Jewish men are in a stable condition after being attacked yesterday morning. Water companies have been accused of failing to protect the environment after LBC uncovered thousands of delays to the reporting of pollution incidents. We found some cases where firms took more than a year to come forward to say they were responsible for polluting our waterways. And some passengers have reported feeling unwell after a suspected gas leak at a major London train station. Farringdon is closed and the situation is being investigated. LBC weather, cloudy with some showers in the southwest, staying dry and bright elsewhere, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
A box of Abel & Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics, and options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Dan's in.
Jen's in.
Tom, Alice, looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It is 33 minutes after 11. When we are having conversations like this one in the immediate aftermath of events like the ones in Golders Green yesterday, I will accept, but I won't necessarily brook any criticism that I'm not as robust as I sometimes am with callers, and that I don't either close people down or cut people off in ways that I might do at other times. And I stand by that decision because, feelings are running so incredibly high. And fear is real. Fear is real. And fear makes us all do strange and sometimes silly things, or dangerous things. Fear is an incredibly corrupting energy, isn't it? It's very hard to stay calm when you are frightened. In fact, it's probably impossible. So by all means, criticise me for not being more robust with callers, but I stand by that decision on a day like today, okay? Tom's in Mason. Tom, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Good morning. How are
you? Hello, Tom. Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Well, quite an explosive morning. I'm hearing rhetoric this morning which upsets me, and I've heard something similar on Tom's show after the Manchester stabbing,
okay,
is that the Jewish community, by and large, is at risk for not speaking loud enough about the actions of Israel. As a Jewish person, as an Israeli, actually, that has lived in the UK for over 20 years, I am concerned that I need to sort of label myself or leave the house with a label to not be a target, a potential target.
And it probably wouldn't, and I don't think it would work anyway, to be honest with you.
No, and this is sort of what I wanted to touch on this. Yes. I heard what Mark said earlier, and I agree with him to a degree, but also something that Douglas Murray said in an interview some time ago, is that anti-Semitism is shape-shifting. And since 2008 till 2021, there's been in the UK, according to the CPS, between 500 to 2,000 reports of anti-Semitism in the UK per year. This has nothing to do with October 7th. I understand that things have gone a bit
My understanding was that reports had gone up quite a lot since October the 7th. I definitely read that this morning, but I haven't got the precise source in front of me. I think that the ancient hatreds and the constant anti-Semitism is not debatable. That is a thing. But the context has changed, I think, but in this country since October the 7th.
Well, this is what scares me.
Since the response to October the 7th and since October the 7th.
So let's look at it at two sides. The response of the Israeli government to October the 7th,
yes,
as a cause to a rise in anti-Semitic cases in the UK, but also calls like globalized the intifada and jihad in the marches that could have also caused this. Now, I don't want marches to be banned at all. I think it's a privilege and a right, also an obligation. But you know what scares me is that if these marches will be banned now, Jews in the UK will get in trouble for dismantling civil rights.
Because it would be done in your name.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, again, I mean, unless we were all on all of these marches, it's pretty hard to make general claims about them. But I know that people have been arrested for chanting Globalize the Intifada. I think Peter Tatchell got arrested for carrying a placard that said Globalize the Intifada on it. So when we all sort of gratefully agree that there is something that can be done, they can clamp down on the rogue elements in these marches more effectively, It turns out they already are, or at least they are already trying, to which we can respond by saying, well, try harder, do more.
We do, but it needs to come back to the basics, and this is where education plays a part. And I don't remember the exact numbers or who the gentleman was on the Nick Farage show this morning that said that there has been a massive decrease in anti-Semitic studies in schools in the UK.
I think it was Holocaust studies, specifically.
Holocaust studies, yes. Holocaust studies, which again, you cannot separate the Holocaust from the Jews for obvious reasons.
No, of course you can't, but the thing that would help minimise anti-Semitism would be to have a better understanding of the Holocaust.
Yes, it would be. And again, it didn't quite start there either, and it didn't stop afterwards. But we have to carry on talking about history and what's been happening, and the history of the Jewish people is important, just because we are so spin
well,
across
I've,
the world
I've
and
always
spread out.
Found that to be the most powerful thing. The problem is, and this might be a problem, I'd be interested in your thoughts, this might be a problem that comes from both the passage of time, from the end of the Second World War and the discovery of the full horrors of the Holocaust, and simultaneously, as we learn, a reduction in some of the teaching that is done. In that, for me, and this is a very personal opinion, Tom, I want to make that absolutely clear.
Sure, I accept it.
I consider Israel's right to exist to be unique on the planet at this time, because it is the place where you go when it starts happening again. And that, to me, has always, politically, philosophically and ethically, given it a unique status that some people have a huge problem with. But I just want to get this out. The more you understand and know of the Holocaust, I've always thought, the harder it is to resist the idea that the Jewish people on this planet need a place to go. And that's what Israel is.
My wife finally asked me this morning, she has no tie to Israel, other than me, of course, so she asked me...
That's quite a big tie, Tom.
Yeah. Would you consider going back there? And I didn't have an answer, because it's just so complicated for me to answer that, not least because I've been here for more than half my life.
Sure.
But interestingly enough, me, as a liberal Jew, more of a secular Jew, I wear my Judaism more as a heritage and identity as opposed to a religion.
Yes.
But... every time something like this happened and you hear Jews on the radio say, we need to leave, it makes me want to rejoice more. I'm not religious, but I want to wear kippah. My daughter, by definition, perhaps is not Jewish, but she sees herself as a Jewish. And she started wearing her a David Starr necklace that my mum gave her.
Gosh.
Because she feels so proud to be part of the Jewish community. And at the same time, I have to worry.
Yeah. Of course you
do. That's my two pence for the morning.
Well, and it's very helpful. Do you think that the question of conflation is actually too confusing to admit?
I'll tell you what I think.
Go on.
I think that if whoever the leaders in Israel are, if they say tomorrow, okay, let's work together with whomever's on the other side to establish a right Palestinian state, I don't think anti-Semitism will stop, period.
No, of course it won't. No, of course it won't. But I mean, we're talking about turning down the temperature, not extinguishing the flames. If only we could talk realistically about extinguishing the flames, but we can't. Thank you, Tom. It is 11:41. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Simon Mark's with us after the 11:45. Before that, Geraldine is in Waltham Forest. Geraldine, what would you like to say?
Well, so I'm not Jewish, but what I'm seeing on social media is every time something like, well, what happened yesterday, I'm still seeing people justifying it or conflating it with what's happening in the Middle East and with the Israeli government. But or people saying things like... here we go, they're victims again. We would never see this. We never see this with anybody else. We would not accept this.
I mean, you should see some of the anti-Islamic stuff that I've got appearing in front of me just today when we're talking about anti-Semitic attacks in Golders Green.
Yeah, and the thing is that but most of it, you know, I'm seeing people defend it at least, but I'm seeing when it's something to do, which is a tiny community, if we remember that.
Mm.
You know, the Jewish community, I think it's only 250,000 people in the whole. It's a tiny, but I'm not seeing people...
condemn it enough.
No, I'm not saying people say.
I mean, I worry sometimes. Sorry, Joe.
I usually reply something like, "Are you justifying what's happening to Jewish people?" Because for me, it's completely separate. You know, I wouldn't justify an attack on a Muslim person because of what Hamas did on October the 7th. But I don't know why, in this case, it's not defended enough.
Everybody, whether Muslim or not, was called upon to condemn what Hamas did on October the 7th before they were permitted to offer any sort of opinion on the broader picture. I worry about social media, listening to you, Geraldine. I honestly don't know whether or not it's worth...
There's not enough support.
Well, my life has improved immeasurably since I stopped spending so much time on it, precisely because it's full of hateful comments and disgust and lies. I mean, I was chatting to some friends about this last night, and what's massively underplayed in all of these conversations is the commoditization of lies. There's so... Or horribleness. So, you know, conspiracy theories. There's a conspiracy theory in play at the moment I hadn't even got my head around properly, and it's relevant to an unfolding court case, so I probably can't say anything about it at the moment. But good God, how the things that people believe, and we sit there trying to wrestle with the psychology of it, but of course what social media has done is reward extremity and reward dishonesty. So people say vile things, people tell ridiculous lies, and the algorithm gives them money or status or clicks. And therefore the merry-go-round continues. But I don't know. I don't know. I mean, having an army of nice people on social media responding to the nasty people sounds like a lovely idea. But, of course, we had it. And then Elon Musk came along and bought it and turned everything upside down. Thank you, Geraldine. It's coming up to 11:45. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I think I've got a missed information for you. I've definitely got a Simon Marks for you. And all things being equal, I should have a mystery hour for you all in the next hour and 15 minutes.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Stabbed for being Jewish. Plain and simple. More words from politicians. So many people have been warning for so long that this was going to happen. No one appears to be listening.
Home Secretary Shaban Mahmood, why have you failed so lamentably to protect Jewish people in this country?
The government has already funded more money for education within our school system.
So there will be classes?
Yes, that is. So that we can deal... Those are issues that are being taken forward by the Department for Education.
So it is just words again, isn't it?
No, the money has been made available. There are also reviews into what more we need to do
in our NHS. Meanwhile, there are firebombs and people being stabbed. Can we stop with the reviews and have some action?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swim with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
It's Munich, 1936, and all eyes are on the capital for the upcoming Olympic Games. As athletes fight for gold and the Nazis fight for power, Detective Sebastian Wolf faces a battle of his own. In a search that will take him from high society to the city's darkest corners, Wolf is about to learn just how easily the hunter becomes the hunted. Evil in High Places is the gripping new historical thriller from the million-copy bestseller Rory Clements. Out now.
Dan's in.
Jen's in.
Tom. Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern. When they're racing across a faraway land, when the clock's ticking and money's dwindling, when you don't know how they'll make it to the next stop,
can't believe they're so lost.
You got lost going to the supermarket.
It was just that one time.
Nothing brings us together like Great TV. And the TV license covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy the journey of your favourite adventure travel show. Search TV license together.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 11:48. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we turn our attention next to events on the other side of the Atlantic. I dread these moments in one sense, and in another sense, I look forward to them almost more than any other moments on the show, because there's every possibility, particularly when we've been conducting a conversation that demands the highest levels of concentration and resistance of any distraction from me. There's always a chance that when I come to say to Simon Marks, what's up, Simon, he's going to drop something on me that I'm previously unaware of, such is the nature of Donald Trump's administration. What's up, Simon?
Well, there is a bit of breaking news that is up, James, as we come on air. The supreme leader in Iran, Mojtaba Khamenei, has issued a statement saying the only place Americans belong in the Persian Gulf is at the bottom of its waters.
Oh, Lord.
That's the first thing we've heard from the supreme leader in several days. There is, of course, continuing uncertainty about the nature of the injuries that he received during the early attacks on Iran that also killed his father, the former Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, and other members of the new Supreme Leader's family. But this comes 24 hours after President Trump told a reporter from the website Axios that he is considering resuming attacks on Iran in a bid to try and force them back to the negotiating table. Because that strategy has worked so well over the course of the last 8 weeks. But that's where things currently stand on Iran. The other thing, of course, that is up is the sudden social media posting by the president last night. And let me remind everyone, the king and the queen are still here. They are due to be returning to the White House this morning to bid a formal farewell to the president and the first lady. But even while they are here, even while the king's very carefully, well-crafted rebuke to President Trump and everything that he stands for in that speech to Congress is still echoing through the halls on Capitol Hill, President Trump last night announced the United States is studying and reviewing the possible reduction of troops in Germany with a determination to be made over the next short period of time. That is because while the King and the Queen have been here and our focus has been on the nature of our bilateral relationship with the United States, the U.S. relationship with Germany has taken a catastrophic turn after Chancellor Friedrich Merz made a speech earlier in the week saying that the United States was being humiliated by Iran.
It's just true.
Saying that he believes that the United States and Israel began their war on Iran on February the 28th without any kind of plan. He sees no strategy whatsoever, no strategic plan on the part of the United States to find an off-ramp to this conflict. And that, of course, is now leading directly to the president threatening to reduce the size of the American troop force. There are 36,000 American troops stationed in Germany, 6 separate garrisons, 40 separate military installations, including, of course, the Ramstein Air Base and the Coordinating Strategic Command Center in Wiesbaden. This is exactly the kind of move you would be taking, not only if you wanted to punish the German Chancellor, but if you wanted to begin the process of withdrawing from NATO, and of course, parenthetically, you wanted to deliver a massive win for Russian President Vladimir Putin, this, the reduction of forces from Germany, is exactly the kind of action you would be contemplating. Again, hours after the King made his speech on Capitol Hill saying NATO Article 5, the only time it's ever been invoked was when America was attacked by 9/11. So let's stop all the nonsense with NATO wasn't there for us. The King actually reminding the American people and the lawmakers gathered on Capitol Hill that NATO absolutely was there for the United States on 9/11 and is still there for the United States if the US needs European support. all of that, I think, about to be eviscerated by this president.
Well, until he changes his mind and says that Merz loves him and he's given him a biscuit and they're best friends and, you know, or doesn't. I mean, who knows? You stole a moment of theatre from me there, Simon. I may never forgive you. I was going to suggest that we all be quiet and just listen to the sound of cackling emanating from the Kremlin, because that is pretty much the only thing you can say about most of this with any certainty. And he has, I mean, you probably are too professional to say this, but he's been lying about King Charles, as we predicted he would do, particularly with regard to Iran, or claiming at least.
Yes, on two separate occasions, possibly three since the king arrived. I think certainly two, including in the Oval Office yesterday. The president insisted that if King Charles were the political leader of the UK rather than simply its head of state, he's a fantastic person, and the president absolutely believes that Britain would have been there for the United States, shoulder to shoulder, fighting in Iran. So he's sort of suggesting that the king took a position in talks with him at the White House that I think we need to be extremely sceptical about. But also, James, he reverted last night to a fresh attack on the Prime Minister. So listen to what happened yesterday in the Oval Office when the President was asked by a reporter whether his apparently fantastic, as the President describes them, conversations with the King had led him to reevaluate his antipathy towards Sir Keir Starmer.
My visit with the King really was just, it was extraordinary. I mean, he's an extraordinary man, he's an extraordinary person, and yeah, it helps it from the standpoint that, you know, when you like the king of a country so much, it probably helps your relationship with the prime minister. But, you know, in that case, the prime minister, I said, do you want to send a little help? He said, no, we'll send it after you win the war. I said, that's not good. That's not good.
We all take a fantastic journey in that answer, because it sounds like he's about to say that his relationship with the king has changed his view of the prime minister. But then, of course, we discover that he veers straight back down the path that he's taken so many times before of grousing about what the prime minister clearly never said to him. The prime minister never said to President Trump, we'll come and join you after you've won the war. Mm. So I think that that is the clearest indication we've had yet, that the second the royal couple depart American airspace later today, heading off to Bermuda before they return to the UK, well, even before they depart American airspace, we are reverting to type. And those carefully crafted messages that were delivered on Capitol Hill are simply not being received, accepted, or acted upon in any way by this government.
Aye, and it's almost as if Donald Trump didn't appreciate the subtlety and nuance of King Charles's speech. Perish the thought. We've got quite a few other things to get through. This Supreme Court decision, I mean, King Charles talked about the dangers of threats to democracy, and then as if by magic, up pops this Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, this is a huge Supreme Court decision about the Voting Rights Act that was handed down yesterday. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 is essentially the hallmark decision by the Supreme Court coming out of the civil rights era that sought to provide equality in terms of voting access to the black community and other minority communities that had been suppressed during the civil rights era. And the Voting Rights Act required states to draw congressional districts, you know, constituency boundaries, up on the basis of majority-minority populations. So where black or minority populations made up the majority, those Supreme Court boundaries, those congressional boundaries were required to recognize the majority population. What the Supreme Court did yesterday is say that drawing a district specifically to create a majority-minority area amounts to an unconstitutional use of race. So they are basically saying that under the Voting Rights Act, states were required to pack minority voters together in their own constituencies. Now, Republicans, particularly all over the country, are allowed to break those districts apart. This guts the central tenet of the voting rights decision of 1965. And immediately we are seeing hasty, rushed efforts by Republicans in states all over the country to take advantage of this decision handed down by a Supreme Court that, remember, has six Republican-appointed justices to only three Democrats. They want to take advantage of it before a whole series of ballot deadlines kick in between now and November all over the country so that they can basically pack the House of Representatives with as many Republican districts as possible. We saw yesterday the Senate in Florida giving final approval to moves there that we believe are going to create four new Republican districts in Florida. In South Carolina, Republicans are talking about taking action in order, literally, to gift President Trump the entire array of congressional districts in South Carolina, a state, of course, with a very substantial African-American vote. This is a massive decision, and it sets the stage for so much more jiggery-pokery, as we've discussed before, between now and November. And never mind cackling in the Kremlin yesterday, there will have been cackling in the White House about it as well.
And, of course, when they're not busy defending democracy, sarcasm emoji, they're busy defending free speech. Jimmy Kimmel's in the firing line again. This is a comedian who made a joke, but the impacts and the ramifications of that go far beyond late-night television.
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel, who made, I think it's fair to say, a pretty awful joke about Melania Trump looking like an expectant widow, not least because he kind of manufactured images of Melania and Baron Trump in his own studio. Of course, they weren't there. This was broadcast before last Saturday's attempted attack on the Washington Hilton Hotel, where in the basement, far away from where the attempted attack occurred, the president and lawmakers and journalists were yucking it up at the White House Correspondents Association dinner before it was scrubbed. Now, Donald Trump's Federal Communications Commission chief, seeing the fury of Melania Trump and Donald Trump demanding Jimmy Kimmel's head for his monologue, are threatening ABC stations across the country that are owned and operated by ABC with license revocation. They're engaging in a review of their diversity and inclusivity policies that could lead to license revocation. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that happens, you know, in tin pot dictatorships.
North Korea, well,
it is underway now because the President of the United States, who last Saturday at that dinner was supposed to be celebrating the First Amendment guaranteeing free speech, takes objection to a joke made by a late-night comic.
And I think important to remember at almost every stage of this saga that when Robert Mueller died, the former head of the FBI and a decorated war hero, Donald Trump stated, "I'm glad he's dead." That's the level of, concern, if you like, that he has demonstrated for other people's feelings historically. Thank you, Simon. I hopefully catch up again tomorrow, but depends on what happens, doesn't it? As always, a couple of other things on the list as well, but we did talk yesterday about James Comey's arrest and Trump sticking his mug on passports now. You're going to take, what was it that Mike in Greenwich said? It's going to take years to get his face off of stuff. It's 12:01. Mystery Hour after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, in the past few minutes, the Bank of England has decided to keep the base rate of interest on hold at 3.75%. Analysts think a rate rise could still be on the horizon if the Iran war continues to put pressure on UK inflation. Sir Keir Starmer says an attack on our Jewish community is an attack on all of us. The Prime Minister has been meeting with criminal justice agencies in Downing Street after a double stabbing in Golders Green. The UK's counter-terror watchdog has called anti-Semitism in the UK a national emergency. But Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood has told LBC the UK is not at that point yet.
A national emergency would mean that we suspend elements of our democracy. I don't think we are there yet. I think we need to strike a better balance between the freedom to protest,
so
but also the freedom of people to be able to go about their business. If the marches continue, they do so with greater police powers that have just hit the statute books.
Two Jewish men are in a stable condition after being attacked yesterday morning. Iran's supreme leader says a new chapter has been taking shape for the Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz since the US and Israel began their war. In a new written statement, Mojtaba Khamenei has said Iran will secure the Gulf region and eliminate the enemy's abuses of the waterway. Oil prices have surged to their highest level since 2022 over fears Donald Trump may be planning to escalate the war. Water companies have been accused of sticking two fingers up to people after LBC uncovered thousands of delays in reporting illegal pollution incidents. Some firms took more than a year to disclose that they had been responsible for pollutants entering Britain's waterways. Robert Forrester is a whistleblower who used to work at the Environment Agency.
The data is an absolute disgrace. Pollution events are fast-moving events, so the sooner you attend them, the better. That means the better evidence is gathered. If you delay it, you allow that impact to go undetected to some extent.
One of Britain's busiest railway stations has reopened after some passengers reported feeling unwell. British Transport Police were called out to Farringdon to reports of a suspected gas leak. 10 people have now been arrested in connection with allegations of sexual offences and modern slavery in Crewe. Members of the group, a Mahdi religion of peace and light, were detained when properties were raided yesterday. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 94 points at 10,307. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy with some showers in the southwest this afternoon, staying dry and bright elsewhere with a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as maths, English and science, I study creative subjects such as media, drama, art and design, business and music technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, 4 minutes after 12 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour is upon us. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not available anywhere else in the radio universe. Change the intro, Keith. Radio universe. The way it works is relatively straightforward. You ring in with a question and someone else rings in with the answer. I sit in absolute final judgment, godlike, or ex cathedra, my pronouncements on this matter. I decide whether the question is correctly answered or not, and if it is correctly answered, you receive a Mystery Hour round of applause. My favourite contributor of the week, whether it is a questioner, an answerer, or simply a heckler, is in line to receive a Mystery Hour game, of which there are now two iterations. The original board game and the Travel Edition, It's in a Tin. The Travel Edition is a completely different game from the original board game. And both are enduringly and immensely popular, and one of them could be yours if you are my favourite contributor of the week. It is 6 minutes after 12. That's pretty much it. So, if you're familiar with those those newspaper columns like Notes and Queries in The Guardian, then you've already got a fair idea of what Mystery Hour is all about. All we try to do is deliver answers a little bit quicker than you can if you're having to send letters or emails and wait for a reply. If your qualifications are supreme, I mean, if they are sublime, then you could receive a Railiota, which is the highest honour available to radio phone-in callers anywhere in the world. That there are people who barely speak English desperate to receive a Railiota. I mean, elsewhere in the world. It is spoken of in hushed tones at radio conferences. When people discuss prizes that have been given away historically on radio programmes, some stations have given away £1 million. Some stations have given away cars and holidays. But the most prized prize in the history of radio is a Railiota. So if your qualifications to answer a question are beyond brilliant, then you might get one of those. Not just during Mystery Hour, actually. I should remind you of this. Sometimes we get a call on a topic from somebody whose expertise and experience is so complete and so profound. Most recently, I think Ash in Northampton, who picked up a few on Mystery Hour over the years by dint of his maritime training, a former merchant seaman who now trains and instructs merchant seamen. But it turned out that he was one of the best authorities we could possibly go to on the question of the Strait of Hormuz. So he got himself a Ray Liotta outside Mystery Hour because his qualifications to contribute to the conversation that he contributed to were so extraordinarily good. Indeed, I'm told by Ash that he now has the words Ray Liotta recipient on his business card, as everybody who has ever received one should. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. It's at least a chapter in a biography, isn't it? At least one chapter. Shall we get going? Shall we get going? Do I need to say anything? Oh, hang on. That thing about the games, it's a proper competition, that is, with legal requirements. So we need to go to lbc.co.uk to find the terms and conditions, should you so desire. And if you want to find out more about the games themselves, then get yourself over to mysteryhour.co.uk. And that concludes the spiel. Time now to commence the Mystery Hour. It is Chris in Ormskirk who will kick things off. Chris, question or answer?
Afternoon, James. It's a question, please.
Carry on.
I hope someone can answer this. It keeps me up at night. So the temperature up here in the northwest of England is 16 degrees centigrade. Perfect time to ring you about this, which is warm.
Yeah.
Pretty warm outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Temperate. Anyway, the nice temperature in the office I've just left, the air conditioning is set at 16 degrees centigrade.
Yeah.
I've just popped into my car, set the same temperature for the air conditioning at 16 degrees centigrade. It's freezing in the car and in the office.
Oh.
On my car display, it says it's 16 degrees centigrade outside as well, and it's warm.
So what's going on?
16 degrees centigrade is correct. This keeps me up at night, James.
So all three environments report a temperature of 16 degrees centigrade.
Yep.
But two of them are freezing cold and one of them is temperate.
Yeah. There's currently a penguin putting his coat on in my back seat at the moment, James. It's freezing in the car.
What is going on? That's the question. Sometimes, I don't know whether you're familiar with this habit that I have. Sometimes I pause at moments like this and sort of string the conversation out a bit because I'm thinking there might be quite an obvious answer to this that is going to appear in the back of my brain.
I've tried.
I said goodbye to Chris. So like wind chill factor, humidity, it's not going to be any of those things, is it? Keith's looking quite gnomic, Chris, I can tell you. Keith doesn't often look
really?
he doesn't often look gnomic, but he's looking quite gnomic at the moment, as if he thinks this does have quite an obvious and easy answer, but he is, of course, not allowed to take part in Mystery Hour, so we'll have to wait and see. Right, it's on the board. Take care.
Thanks, James.
Look after the penguin. It's 10 minutes after 12. And anyone else visiting zoos or safari parks today, please don't try this at home. Just leave the penguins in the enclosure. Robert's in Whitchurch, in Shropshire. Robert, question or answer?
I have a question, please, James.
Carry on.
So, if you're dyslexic, does the language that you're reading affect how easy or difficult it is to manage? So, is English and the Latin alphabet harder for a dyslexic person than, say, the Chinese alphabet or Arabic or whatever?
I currently really like this question, but it might be daft. I suspect neither of us have dyslexia.
Oh, no, I don't know.
No. So it might well be that a dyslexic person listening to this is scoffing at both of us because the answer is so obvious, but that doesn't matter to us because we don't know what the answer is, therefore we're curious.
Well, this arose because someone who I've recently started working with is dyslexic, and talking about this question, it became very difficult for them to explain to me as a non-dyslexic person quite how it works.
Yes.
It is and it isn't.
It's a spectrum like so many other learning issues and neurodiversities, although dyslexia isn't a neurodiversity, but like so many things, it's a spectrum and there's different spots on it. But I love the idea, or at least I love the question of whether or not a language that is based on characters or glyphs, you know, is going to have a different impact on a dyslexic person than a language that is based on the letters and the numbers that we recognise. The reason it might be a daft question is very simply that if it is all about letters and numbers, then it wouldn't matter what form the letters and numbers took. But then a Chinese character can be a phrase, can't it? Not just a word. So does that make things harder or easier, or does it make no difference at all? Thank you, Robert. I like that. 12:12 is the time. I like it when I glance at the clock and all the numbers are in alignment, and I just got 12, 12, 12. What's the delay, Keith? Is it... What? So you're 10 seconds behind me, so wait... Oh, we just missed it. Oh, flipping heck! We're going to have to wait until tomorrow now to do that again. We could do 10, 10, 10, can't we? At 10, 10, 20 tomorrow, I'll tell you to look at your clock and it'll say 10, 10, 10. And you'll say, well, I've got a big hand and a little hand on my clock, James. What are you talking about? John's in Leeds. I think I need interrupting, John. Question or answer?
Hello, James. It's a question.
Carry on, John.
So, I have two daughters, and one that's like me has green eyes and brown hair.
Oh, yes.
And the other has blue eyes and blonde hair like my partner.
Oh, yes.
And the question is specifically, tickly feet.
Oh, yes.
Because the one that's exactly like me has extremely tickly feet. And the other one has absolutely no feeling, and you could tickle her feet all day long without any emotion from her whatsoever.
So is it inherited from you, or is it linked to the genetics?
That's the question. Yeah. Is it genetic? Is it inherited by me? Or if you go further, like my father, he's very tickly feet, and my mother has no tickly feet at all either.
I mean, in an average week, how much time does your family spend tickling each other's feet?
A hell of a lot.
Why not, though, right? Why not? So is it an inherited thing? Ticklishness in general? I mean, not necessarily confined to feet, but we can certainly confine it to feet. That'd be lovely. Nice one, John. I don't know how ticklish my feet are, actually. I don't think I'm particularly... One of my... Yeah, you're right, actually. It's not necessarily both of them. Keith, we'll try it in the break, shall we? Do you want to come in? I'll take my socks off. Joe's in Cambridge. Joe, question or answer?
Hi, Joe. Question, please.
Carry on, Joe.
So when it was the Queen's Jubilee, yes. And they did a round of making new cities,
yes,
and so the places like Southend and whatever got city status. The question is, if somewhere such as Huddersfield or Ipswich had been made a city, would they have to rename their football team?
Oh, I like that question. I saw it coming as well. As soon as you said Huddersfield and Ipswich, what have they got in common? Oh, here we go. I mean, has it ever happened? How many cities? I don't think so, would they? I mean, it would be a little bit unfair, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm not sure.
Pay for everything. It'd be up to them. They can change the name whenever they want. You're questioning whether they would be required to, whether it would be compulsory.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure no, but I don't know who's going to be able to go definitive on that and answer the question, but I like it. It's never happened, has it?
I don't know.
No.
It's possible.
Well, let's just go through some of the towns that have been promoted, not in the football sense, but promoted to city status. You mentioned Southend. What other ones have we got?
They were United, so it wouldn't be...
Southend United. What other ones?
I'm not sure. I can't remember. I could look it up, but that's cheating.
Well, it's not. Not when we're just bantering. You're allowed to look stuff up mid-banter, because it's not... We're not actually looking up the answer. And was it... It's only just the... Bangor?
Bangor, I don't know what that's called.
Colchester.
Doncaster.
Town.
Rovers.
Douglas? Don't think they've got a football team. Dunfermline, Milton Keynes.
Athletic.
Stanley... And Wrexham United. I mean, maybe that's why. Maybe it was too controversial, so they didn't let any towns whose football teams are called towns get promoted. Isn't Ipswich a city?
Ipswich is a town. And they're called Ipswich Town.
No, but isn't Ipswich a city?
That I'm not sure.
I think that could be the answer to your question. If Ipswich is a city, then obviously you don't have to rename yourself city if you become promoted to a city status from a town status.
Yeah. Well, one of the ones that applied was Northampton, and they're a town, but they didn't get it.
Luton? Is Luton a city? Luton's not a city. It's a van.
I don't think so.
Sorry. All right, it's on the list. I quite like it, but the Ipswich example may have actually provided the answer. It's 12:16.
This is LBC.
A box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on, and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole.
unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialized in installing our fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. Perfect for modern apartments, conservation areas, listed properties, or simply for those who don't want an ugly unit on the outside. Head to coolyou.london. Cool You for a cool, comfortable home.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less, less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:18 is the time. Mystery Hour is upon us. I think there might actually be an example that answers Joe's question, but obviously I'm not allowed to read out texts on the programme, so I wait for someone to ring in. Phil's in Dereham in Norfolk. Phil, question or answer? Carry on, Phil.
To the air conditioning temperature question.
It's not a great line, so make it snappy. It's too bad. We're going to have to fix that. Sorry, mate. It's not your fault. It's never, ever, ever anybody's fault. It's not my colleague's fault. It's not the caller's fault. And it's certainly not my fault. It's not Keith's fault. It's not Eleanor's fault. It's not Rebecca's fault. It's not Martha's fault. It's nobody's fault. A phone line goes bad. It is simply the case that something has happened in the interim between speaking to the producer and speaking to the presenter. Shane's in Bedford. Shane, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Shane.
My query is, why does my nose not run when I sleep?
When you what? Sleep?
Sleep. Because I've got really bad hay fever, and all day long it runs and it runs and it runs, and then overnight it doesn't.
Yeah.
But if it's an allergy, why doesn't it?
Are you suffering at the moment?
Yeah, that's probably why I sound quite nasally.
But it's also why the assistant producer that you spoke to thought you said speak, not sleep. Because they wrote on the screen, why doesn't my nose run when I speak? But you said sleep.
Yeah, I get it quite bad.
So that's a mark of how blocked your nose is. It's like a second class of return to Dottingham, please. Isn't it? Yeah. For people of a certain age. What would it be? It's just sleep. I don't know. I mean, it's a good one, isn't it? It doesn't run at all. You never wake up sneezing or anything like that?
No, never wake up sneezing. Whether it's like, when there's like snot in there and I wake up in the morning, it's like crusty.
I don't remember asking a question that invited that very specific answer, Shane. To be honest with you, people are currently having their lunch, obviously, having a nice snack. I mean, it could be draining away somewhere. So yeah, all right, you're massively, massively pollen sensitive, really, really bad hay fever, all day long, sniffling and snovelling. And then you pop to bed, and the next thing you know, you're out cold, and there's nearly a drip. Why? Why is that? I like that question. Is it very boring when people suggest things that you've almost certainly already tried?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right then. Have you tried local honey?
I'm vegan.
Oh, well. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. Robert is in Chelmsford. Robert, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Go on then.
Coming back on the city question.
Ipswich is a town. I just want to make that clear. I got a bit carried away there. Ipswich is a town. Norwich is a city, which is why everyone in Ipswich is so bitter.
Yeah, but obviously there's no rule in terms of football clubs, but Chelmsford City, Chelmsford became a city in 2012, but was actually called itself Chelmsford City Football Club since the 1930s.
Had it? It called itself Chelmsford City when it was a town?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Wow, and they did that perhaps in anticipation of eventually becoming a city. Who knows? Swansea used to be called Swansea Town, but now Swansea City.
They got made a city and they promoted themselves to city status in the football team. So you don't have to do it. Some teams have, some teams haven't.
Absolutely, that's it.
Have we got one? The only bit missing from this jigsaw, Robert, would be a town with a football team called Town that stayed town after the town became a city.
I don't think it's happened.
Oh, come on.
No.
Hat trick. No. We want a hat trick, don't we? We've got Chelmsford. We've got Swansea. Yeah. What would be the missing piece of this jigsaw? I don't know. All right, nice one. Qualifications?
Big football fan and live in Chelmsford.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Robert.
Cheers.
Lovely stuff. I didn't know that about Chelmsford. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. Julie's in Sheffield. Julie, question or answer?
Oh, hello, James. It's a question, please.
Fantastic. Carry on, Julie.
How is it that if I look at a star...
Yeah.
If I look at it slightly to one side,
what?
It's actually brighter, clearer than if I look at it directly.
Do you wear a monocle?
Well, I did think it was my dodgy eyes, but I actually heard astronomer say that if you do that, yes, it does become clearer for some reason.
So I look directly at a star.
Yeah.
And it's in the centre of my vision.
Yeah.
And then I move slightly so that the star is in the right of my vision. So my eyes...
Slightly to one side. It does actually become clearer.
And I've moved my head, have I? I've moved my head. I've moved my head, have I? And left my eyes in the same place. Is that what
I don't think it's where your head is. I think it's just where your eye is looking.
So I look slightly to the side of the star and the star gets brighter.
Yes,
I'm not being
clearer.
Thick. Well, I am being thick, but I'm not being facetious. I don't actually. I'm trying to enact it, looking at a light in the studio roof. To be honest with you, Julie.
It's strange. If you're looking generally at ordinary objects, they become less clear because you're using a bit of periphery. But if you look at a night sky, you look at the star. I glance to my to the right of that star.
Yeah.
Because that's my lead eye, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it becomes clearer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, all right. I'll try and find out for you if I can.
Okay.
Do you do a lot of stargazing, Julie?
I love looking at the moon and stars.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, it's just beautiful.
It roots you as well, doesn't it? It kind of reminds you of your own insignificance, which is actually a good thing to be reminded of, particularly if you're worrying about things.
Yeah, definitely does.
Like staring at the ocean. 24 minutes after 12 is the time. Lovely question, Julie. Thank you. From Julie to Jamie in Burntwood. Jamie, what would you... Question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, mate.
Thank you. I wrote this one down because I'm always forgetting them.
Good stuff.
I was listening on the radio the other day, and they said a Russian fighter jet had entered UK airspace.
Yeah.
And our fighter jets were scrambled.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, scrambled? Well, we scramble an egg.
We do.
So why do we say we're scrambling a fighter jet?
It's a lovely question, isn't it?
I thought, I'm not going to Google it, I'm going to wait, and then I use this moment.
Oh, I love that. It's a great question. I wonder if it's the airmen, I'm just thinking of them scrambling. Do you remember that footage of Prince Harry when he was giving an interview? I think
yes.
It was at Camp Bastion, it was definitely in Afghanistan, and then it suddenly went off, the alarm went off, and he legged it.
Yeah.
To his helicopter. Wonder if it describes, originally, it describes what the servicemen and women do when an alarm goes off. They scramble to the... Because that would kind of understand... I'd understand scramble.
Or were they having breakfast and it was being interrupted?
Three scrambles. The scrambler bikes. But is that called scrambling? If you're riding a scrambler bike, that's scrambling.
They call them a scrambler, don't they?
Yeah, there's three... And two not related to eggs. But why do we talk about jets being scrambled? I like that question, Jamie. I like it a lot. Good
Thank
man.
You.
I'll try and get you an answer. Alan is in Leeds. Alan, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Alan.
It's for the lady who asked why, when I look at a star, is it brighter
She's just over the way in Sheffield as well.
Right, okay.
So my dad's from Leeds. Oh, my dad was from Leeds before we lost him. My mum's from Sheffield. So this question has already assumed a very romantic and emotional
resonance. Connection.
Exactly that. Carry on.
If you've heard of rods and cones in your eye,
of course.
In your retina,
yes.
Now when you look straight at something, you've got greater concentration of the cones, which pick up colour very well, and rods. But rods are more sensitive to light, but only to sort of monochrome. So when you look straight at something, you're more sensitive to colour, but when you turn your head sideways, the light comes through and hits the retina to one side.
Brilliant
where
answer.
It's hitting the rods.
Perfect.
So the light looks brighter,
yeah.
But it's more monochrome, so it's harder to pick up. Well, colour at night as well.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a perfect answer. Qualifications?
I've got an A-level in biology.
That was it? You did it back at A-level? You're not an optician or anything like that?
No. Well, I've got... I had to look into it because I've got astigmatism,
okay.
Which is misdiagnosed.
Right.
But no, an A-level in biology.
There it is. Rods and cones. Rods and cones. Round of applause for Alan, please. Lovely stuff. Laura is in Stoke-on-Trent. Laura, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So, dyslexia?
Yes.
It's got nothing to do with characters or anything like that. It's literally the fact that it's black on white is why things will move around on a page.
Ah. Oh, so have I so read like, that if you print stuff colours on different coloured paper, it can actually alleviate some of the difficulties sometimes?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought I'd read that. So it wouldn't make any difference at all?
It wouldn't make any difference if, like, say it was Chinese or anything like that.
Hieroglyphics.
No, it's literally the fact that it's just black on white and things will move up and down.
Qualifications?
I'm dyslexic.
Oh, that'll do. And do you, and how long have you spoken Chinese?
I don't speak Chinese, no, but... but I have tried to read French.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in high school, I tried to read French, and I struggled to understand it anyway. But the fact that it was black on white, I still couldn't... It still would move.
Yeah, I mean it is... I don't know how much you did struggle to understand French, but it's the same letters as English, Laura.
Yes.
It's not... I love this. Have a round of applause. Do you have... I interrupted the round of applause. So unprofessional. Do you have a favourite... Do you have a preference? What do you find
orange
easier?
Orange for me.
Orange paper, black ink?
Yes.
Gosh, that's really interesting. Thank you, Laura. It's on the list, although it may be that someone else has got a different experience. Yours is definitely true. One more, I think, before the news. Kieran's in Sligo. Kieran, question or answer?
An answer, James.
Carry on.
The answer to the sense of comfort that one feels is when too warm or too cold at 16 degrees.
Yes.
And this is an issue that has plagued me all my professional life. Comfort is a very subjective thing for humans.
Right.
And it is subject to all sorts of variables. You can be sitting in a cold room but have the sun shining through the window. You feel warm.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So you'll find an office where the temperature is perfectly set at 20 degrees.
Hmm.
People near the windows, they're too hot. People in the centre can be too cold. And the other thing is, you can have two people sitting in the centre of the building, away from the sun, side by side. One feels hot, one feels cold.
Yeah.
So you have to take people's metabolism into account, what clothing they're wearing, how active they are.
Yeah, but it was the same bloke. It was Chris in Ormskirk.
It was, but the environment changed each time. So was there more radiant heat affecting him? And the other thing is, when we talk about air conditioning, or should I say when the general public talk about air conditioning, we refer to that as comfort cooling, usually with a DX system like in a fridge, which blows very cold air at you. Some people can feel that's very cold. So the temperature in the room could be 21, but you're being hit with air at 5 degrees. So it's impossible. So we would have always said, James, if we're in an office building and we have complaints down to 10%, we have achieved perfection. Because 10% will always be unhappy. Too hot, too cold.
So I understand everything you've said, but I still don't know what Chris would say now to himself. So the answer to, is the answer just variables or comfort cooler? What is the actual answer to why his car and his office are supposedly 16 degrees, but they're much, much colder than outside when it is 16 degrees outside?
Yeah, when it's outside, you're primarily being affected by the air temperature. There's very little radiant effect.
Yes.
And if we had time, which I know we don't, there was an experiment done years ago in which they set up a fake office.
Yeah.
Which was surrounded, four walls, ceiling and floor, by radiant heating pipes.
Oh, yeah.
And they also had a very high volume air flowing through the building.
Right.
So they could vary the surface temperatures, and they could vary the air temperature and the air speed. And they were able to work out that it doesn't matter really how hot the air is, if the surrounding surfaces are cold, the person in the room feels uncomfortable because radiant heat is leaving their body and the body is saying, crisis, panic.
So it could be about him as much as it's about where he is.
It's the combination.
Do you want the good news or the bad news?
Go on, give me the good news.
The good news is I had no idea that anybody could be as interesting as you are on the subject of air conditioning.
Yes, I've been told I can sometimes be extremely boring.
I'm not joking. You're not being extremely boring at all. I'm absolutely riveted.
Okay.
But the bad news is I still don't really understand why Chris is getting the same reading in three different environments, except that it could be the surfaces that are in the car or the office. It could be his temperature. He could feel colder even because, so, yeah.
Yes, he could have walked quickly upstairs to get to his car, yeah. So his metabolism is burning a little bit more. But yeah. The other thing you've got to take into account is instrument error. Where, is the instrument calibrated, and where is it located?
This is so incredible. I don't even need to ask what you're qualified. How many years have you spent working in building services or?
Oh my gosh, 40 years.
There it is. Look at that. Have a round of applause from me. and it's really interesting because you can see. How dare anybody? You gave them a ticking off if anyone ever called you boring because they don't think it's boring when they're cold at work, do they? Or when it's too hot in their car or in their office rather. Matt Hewitt's here with the headlines.
The Home Secretary has rejected calls for pro-Palestine marches to be banned after an attack on two Jewish men in North London. But we understand a new law to proscribe organisations that may be linked to hostile states will be proposed in the next session of Parliament. Iran's supreme leader says Tehran will eliminate what he called the enemy's abuses of the Strait of Hormuz in a new statement. Oil prices have surged to their highest level since 2022 because of fears Donald Trump may be planning to escalate the Middle East conflict. And a neo-Nazi has been found guilty of planning a terror attack at the supermarket where he worked. Undercover officers caught Alfie Coleman from Great Notley in Essex with a handgun and 200 rounds of bullets in a car park in East London. LBC weather, a fine, settled day with lots of sunshine, cloudier in the southwest, highs of 21 degrees.
Call LBC now, 0345 6060 973. Text 84850.
Tonight on LBC, Ian Dale will be live from Cardiff for a special election hustings ahead of the Welsh Senate elections. Joining him will be Baroness Eluned Morgan for Labour, Darren Miller for the Conservatives, Rhian ap Iorwerth for Plaid Cymru, Jane Dodds for the Liberal Democrats, Anthony Slaughter for the Greens and Dan Thomas for Reform. They'll be debating the big issues shaping this election and what matters most to voters across Wales. Don't miss Ian Dale live from Cardiff for this special Welsh Senate election hustings tonight on LBC. From 7. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. The time now is 12:34.
LBC.
A box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Fever Tree Mediterranean Tonic Water. Who are you? Usually the mixer, the tea in G&T, but your delicate fragrance, hints of lemon thyme, when the tea is this good. Do you even need the G? Fever Tree, straight up or mixed, it's a matter of taste.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
People ask me, what's my good place? Checking out the food trucks on the weekend with my partner. And knowing that Pension B helped me combine my pensions into one easy to manage plan.
Tacos?
Tacos.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
It is 12:36 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour continues. Question still in need of answers. Why does Shane's nose stop dripping even though he suffers from hideous hay fever? Why does he not have any symptoms when he's asleep? And why do we talk about jets being scrambled? A verb that we would ordinarily apply almost exclusively to eggs. And then I've got John's question written down, but once again, I can't read my own writing. Ticklish, yeah, good Lord. It looks, I don't know what on earth that word is that I've written down. And is ticklishness, Hereditary. Is it genetic? Is it inherited? I like all of those. I think we've answered all the others. Sam's in Amersham. Sam, question or answer?
Oh, well, hi, James. Good to speak to you again.
Likewise, Sam. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Marvellous.
Getting hungry towards lunchtime, and my question is about lunch.
Lunch?
Bagels in particular.
Oh, okay.
I've just always wondered, why do bagels have that silly hole in the middle where all the filling falls through?
If you're making a cream cheese and smoked salmon bagel, the smoked salmon's fine, isn't it? Because
exactly.
It can cover the hole, like a sort of manhole cover. But the cream cheese will fall through the middle quite often.
Yeah, same with egg mayonnaise, same with tuna mayonnaise.
Let's not run through all the sandwich fillings. I think it's going to be the same as a pretzel and other...
I was wondering if it was like a German pretzel that gets stacked.
But it's the... Because what's the nicest bit of the bagel? What makes a bagel and not a bun is that you've got so much, for want of a better word, crust. So if you put a hole in the middle of it, you get loads more crust than you would if it was just...
So there's more surface area.
More surface area. That was the scientific explanation I was searching for.
Could well be the case.
And you can carry them around easily if you have a long stick.
Never seen anybody do that.
What? Well, it doesn't mean it's wrong, does it? It just means that you need to get out more.
Okay.
So you can carry them around easily if you have a long stick, and the extra surface area makes them more delicious and chewy.
Yeah, maybe the boiling process.
And it cooks quicker.
The middle better.
Yeah, I'm not going to take a round of applause for this. But I bet I'm right.
Should we wait for a specialist bagel baker from Golders Green to call us?
That might be helpful. That might be good. What are your plans? What are you thinking of putting in the bagel this lunchtime?
The usual. Well, one of the three we've mentioned already, typically.
Tuna, probably.
Yeah.
It's got a tuna sauce. All right, you're on. Let's find out for you. 12:39 is the time. Why do bagels have a hole? Sounds like a children's book, that, doesn't it? I love it. There's an unhinged headline about children's books, but I've lost it, so I probably won't be able to do that with you today. And then the scrambling, the ticklishness, and the runny nose. Paul's in Inverness. Paul, question or answer?
I'm delighted to give you an answer, James.
Carry on, Paul.
So, regarding the scramble message...
Oh, yes.
Without revealing too much,
really?
There are, yes, there's, you know, national secrets involved, but there's two reasons. So, first of all, essentially, when surveillance people identify something that's a potential threat, they have to pass out a message to everyone involved. So, obviously, the message has got to get to the pilots, it's got to get to other surveillance, and it's also got to get to air traffic controllers. And the technology that they used to code that message was called a scrambler. So that's why it's a scramble message.
Oh, why was it called a scrambler?
Because it would scramble up the words and the meaning of words so that if someone were to intercept that message, they would have to decode it. They would have to have the same scrambler. So you think back to, like, the Enigma machine, for example.
Yeah.
The exact same thing. It would scramble the message. And then also it obviously became synonymous with the idea of a scramble to get to the jets and to get everyone get to positions to get those jets airborne to intercept.
Absolutely love it. Qualifications?
I'm an RAF air traffic controller.
Oh, crikey. There'd be a few RAF traffic controllers, so I don't think you're going to get a Ray Liotta, but would it be possible for anybody to be better qualified than you to answer this question?
Probably a QRA fighter themselves, maybe.
They just receive the message. You send it.
Well, to be fair, I receive it. I don't send it.
Who sends it?
The surveillance people.
We'll
go for a surveillance officer.
This is
one
sensational. What a brilliant answer. And are you based up there, or are you on your holidays?
I am based up there. I am actually on my way to fly to Peru tomorrow, though.
Fantastic.
So I am on my holidays.
Fantastic. Well, enjoy them. I was about 3 hours away from Inverness, but I was in the Highlands a couple of weeks ago for my holidays, and my God, that's a beautiful part of the world, isn't it? It's just obscenely beautiful sometimes, especially when there's been a lot of rain.
That's the reason I chose to get sent up here. It's stunning. Absolutely love it.
It just never gets tired. I love it. Have a round of applause, Paul, and enjoy your holiday.
Thank you very much.
Nothing to do with eggs, then. You live and learn. 12:41, and Simon's in Islington. Simon, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Simon.
I drive around London quite a bit, listening to LBC, obviously.
Yes.
But when I'm not listening to LBC, I have the radio on for music.
Oh, marvellous.
Because I like a bit of music.
Yeah,
now,
I do
too. Now, I get a bit tired sometimes. When I yawn, the pitch of the music drops very, very slightly. Probably about half a semitone.
You just made me yawn then. That is so weird. I literally just did a math. You can tell if you're watching this back on YouTube later. I genuinely just got triggered by you saying, I never really yawn in the studio because I can't really be tired when you've got this much adrenaline coursing through your veins. But there it went. I just yawned like a very tired person. Go on.
Yeah, but when I yawn, it appears to my hearing that the pitch drops slightly.
Yeah, of course it does.
What do you mean, of course it does?
Oh, it's obvious.
Go on.
Well, if you think, what I'd like you to do, if you can, is think of your head as a bell. So all sounds coming into your head are bouncing around the bell of your skull, right?
Yeah.
And then when you open your mouth really, really wide, the timbre or the resonance of the bell will be affected slightly.
Okay, so how do you explain that the semi drops about a semitone? Probably not even a semitone, about half a semitone.
Well, because it's not making that much of a difference to the bell. It's just making a small difference to the bell. And it drops, I mean, I'd need a little bit more knowledge and understanding.
Yes, I think so.
To tell you why it drops and doesn't go up, for example, because I don't really understand. But I bet you, I bet you £1 million that it's... It's because of the resonance of the sound inside your bonds.
So it's slowing up, basically. Like, it's similar to the postcard going past and it's dropping.
Oh, that was uncanny, wasn't it? That's not a police car, is it? Unless they've got budget cuts.
No, that's some idiot trying to get into a car, I think, without turning the alarm off.
So you're listening to music, you yawn, the pitch changes. I'll get you a proper grown-up answer to that, but I bet it's me. Timbre, not pitch, I think I should
say. Yeah, I mean, if it's you, I'll give you a round of applause.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you, Simon. I appreciate it. Every little counts. Love that one. What are we going to write? Simon's head on my notes there. Simon's head, and I'm going to do a little musical note there to remind myself what the question was. 12:44.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting talks mental health provision, and I'll ask him if he thinks the scale of anti-Semitism in the UK is a national emergency or not. How do we educate people out of it?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
When they're racing across a faraway land, when the clock's ticking and money's dwindling, when you don't know how they'll make it to the next stop.
I can't believe they're so lost.
You got lost going to the supermarket.
It was just that one time.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And the TV license covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy the journey of your favourite adventure travel show. Search TV license together.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip
weight
is,
loss? I...
No, forget that.
Never,
you
just keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Save even more this weekend with bank holiday offers in the Furniture Village sale. We've added new offers on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Bank holiday offers end Monday at Furniture Village, an award-winning family business.
Music, news, celebrities, socials, entertainment, podcasts, video.
The world of media and entertainment is a world we all turn to every second that we can. And university isn't for everyone. So, if you're leaving school, take a look at joining Global Academy in year 14 to take a unique course in creative enterprise and kickstart your media career. Get industry experience, develop your entrepreneurial skills, and it's free. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
At Wix, the Home and Garden event is now on. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion. Was £24, now £16. Ends Wednesday. Terms apply.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Wander the streets with more wonder, with up to £200 off city breaks and up to 20% off flights. Book now at EasyJet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights, sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and after protected. T's and C's apply.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It's 12:47. Mystery Hour continues. Paul is in Chagford in Devon. Paul, question or answer?
Answer for bagels.
Marvellous. How many bagels?
How many do you want to order? We got them all.
What have you got? What's the answer?
The answer is, it's how they were delivered. They were stacked on a stick, if you can imagine a cane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the cane would go on the doorknob. The bagels would be stacked vertically on the cane, and there would be a metal wedge that kept the bagels from rolling out into the sidewalk. But it was a delivery system, nothing more.
A bagel stand. There's nothing about the increase in the amount of dough, of crust or the ease of boil, because they're boiled, aren't they, bagels, rather than baked. So they'd cook quicker, you wouldn't have so much dough in the middle. I mean, it's a bit chicken and egg, this, actually. Because what if they were made with holes for other reasons, and then they realised, having made them with holes, that they would be able to transport them on sticks?
I could not challenge that theory.
Qualifications?
New Yorker, Jew.
That'll do. Yeah. I'm going to give you a round of applause, but I'm leaving the door ajar on that, Paul, just in case the hole created the stick rather than the stick being the reason for the hole. Is the hole the reason for the stick, or is the stick the reason for the hole? That's philosophy, that is. Thank you, Paul. Avi is in Mendlesham. Avi, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Yeah, so I'm a bagel maker. I bake 3,000 to 5,000 bagels a week in Suffolk. And the main reason the hole is in the bagel is because we boil the bagels, poach them before putting them in the oven, and the air flows through the bagel to make an even bake, because they're quite a very dense product.
So, I mean, this is uncanny. Two callers in quick succession exploring both theories, but you winning the prize because you actually bake them. And to go back to Paul, because they are baked in that fashion, they could then be transported very easily on a stick.
They're transported that way, and years ago they were also hung at the market on a piece of string, and then when you went to purchase them, they pulled the string down a bit, and then you purchased your bagel that way.
You got your bagel. So the reason why they have a hole in them is because of how they are cooked and constituted.
100%.
That is a beautiful answer. I mean, that's a lot of bagels that you bake.
It is, yes. That's a small week. A busy week is 8,000 bagels. A quiet week's about 3,000 to 4,000 bagels.
Oh, wow. How do you know on a Monday whether or not it's going to be a busy week or a slow week?
Because we do wholesale, we get our orders in on a Saturday for the week ahead, and then we do markets and events on the weekends.
This is lovely stuff. Would you like a free advert?
By all means, that would be amazing.
Carry on.
Yeah, so it's called Bagel or Bagel, and we're based in Suffolk, and we do postal orders, wholesale orders, and we do markets and events.
This is sensational. I love it. I mean, and you're perfectly qualified. It's close to Ray Liotta territory, but I couldn't. I mean, quite a few bagel bakers in the country, but you definitely get a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bagel or Bagel. George is in Thursford, also in Norfolk. George, a question or answer?
An answer, thanks, James.
Carry on, Georgia.
So the lady rang up about dyslexia, and I want to dispute that, actually. So my son is dyslexic, and he's always struggled with reading, but he managed to learn Hebrew, because it's pictures, in about 6 months do his dementia.
Really?
Yes. Sorry, I was just going to say, the different colour page and text on the page is, I think, called Erlen syndrome, and that is related to dyslexia, but it's not the same thing, so I had to take him to the optician for a separate test.
What was that like when he found it so much easier to learn Hebrew than he'd had done to learn reading and writing English? It was presumably quite good for his self-esteem, was it?
Yeah, it really built his confidence, because I know he was really worried about learning it, and to have to stand up in front of people and read it out loud. But he managed I don't know how much of it he actually would be able to translate, but he actually managed to learn.
As long as he managed to regurgitate it at the crucial moment, it doesn't matter how much of it he understood. I love it. Knocked it out of the park. Your family's faith notwithstanding, do you go to the thing that Thursford is most famous for every year, or do you give it a swerve?
I do, because it's literally over the road from my house.
I had a feeling it might be. Georgia, have a round of applause on me.
Thanks so much.
Lovely stuff. 12:52. Tim is in where in Hertfordshire? Tim, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Tim.
So, the question about dyslexia, my answer is very similar to the previous caller.
How on earth did you get on? Is anybody working in the neighbouring office? Honestly. Well, carry on.
It's just to say, it's all to do with what's called the orthography of a language.
Orthography.
The relationship between the shape of the letters and the sound the letters make.
Yeah.
So, in complex languages like French and English, they're harder to learn to read, and the rates of dyslexia are probably somewhat higher. In simpler languages like Finnish, simplified Japanese, they're easier to read, and the rates of dyslexia are lower.
Wow. That's a lovely answer. And I mean, you're right, it tallies with the previous one as well, to create an almost comprehensive response, doesn't it? It's the perfect answer. Qualifications?
I'm a clinical psychologist.
That'll do nicely. A round of applause for Tim. Oh, that was a lovely question. And we said, didn't we, it might be a rubbish question or it might be a lovely question. And then we got three different answers, Laura and Tim. And what's the name of that lovely lady? Georgia in Thursford. Great stuff. And Mark's being very funny today. He says, where's Tim from? And I say, where? Where's Tim? He's from where? Yeah, very good. Quite a few of you found the website for Avi's Bagel Company. And I like to think we might have pushed a little bit. I think this might be a busy week, Avi, as opposed to a quiet week. 12:53 is the time. George is in rugby. George, question or answer?
I've got an answer. Thanks, James.
Yes.
It's an answer to the ticklish question.
Carry on.
But quite annoyingly, I actually think I've got a better answer to the inner, the ear and the pitch question when yawning, but...
No, you can... Oh, well, I see. You were on hold when you came. Well, never mind. Anyway, do the one that you've cleared with the management.
Yes. So, there is... ticklishness is one of the sort of annoying physiological things that's not amazingly understood. But it is understood that there is probably a very small genetic aspect to it. And there's also quite a heavy evolutionary aspect to it. So it's accepted that tickling is kind of a response to threats to vulnerable parts of the body, which is why we have kind of like a shared mapping of where we are most ticklish. But in terms of the actual response of an individual to being tickled, it's more likely due to child psychology and experiences in early age. So positive experiences associated with tickling and negative experiences associated with tickling. And also a learned behaviour as well. So something that you might pick up from your parents through psychology rather than through biological genetic.
So it's a sort of small yes, a muted yes.
Very small yes, yeah.
Okay, qualifications?
So I'm a final phase medical student and I had an examination on a patient who could barely bear to be touched. It was just something I decided to look up.
Oh, that's interesting. And what did they feel when they were touched? Like what we would call tickling, but what they found unbearable?
It was a very visceral response to being tickled. I mean, in touches that you wouldn't typically associate with being overly ticklish.
Wow.
So a stethoscope being placed on them was just too much for them to bear.
Oh, gosh, that wouldn't... Yeah, that's no fun. Have a round of applause, George. Oh, can we squeeze in the head question as well? Should we let him go double? Yeah, go on quickly. Do the head question and the noise question as well.
So you're pretty close.
Yeah.
So there's a tube connecting the throat, the pharynx, and the ear called the Eustachian tube.
Yes.
And it to equalise pressure between the two areas, and it's why when you get an ear infection, it can spread to your throat, and if you get a throat infection, it can spread to your ear. So essentially, when you yawn, you're increasing the pressure in that tube, which equalises the pressure in the middle ear. And produces the vibration felt through the tympanic membrane, which is the eardrum, which is what responds to sound waves.
When,
and it reduces the vibration, which can alter the pitch of the noise if that pressure had changed in the middle ear.
When's your next exam?
I've got my finals in about 8 months.
I think you're going to be all right.
Touch wood.
Another round of applause on me.
Thank you.
That was a beautiful. I bet you're going to be a brilliant doctor as well. You already are. Brett's in Wigan. Brett, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So it's an answer to the gentleman who rang earlier about the runny nose.
Oh, yes.
I'm a lifelong hay fever sufferer. Also have severe obstructive sleep apnea. Majority of it really is gravity. When you stood up and you're walking about, you sat down, gravity is forcing that fluid to drip.
Ooh.
When you're laying down,
yeah,
the muscles are relaxing. Gravity is just going to allow it to go back down the throat and back into disperse itself into the body.
That sounds perfectly reasonable to me. Qualifications, personal experience, or have you looked into it?
Well, because I have the sleep apnea, and because I do suffer quite a lot with hay fever, I do obviously read into it quite a bit.
Oh, good man. So got you a round of applause as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Some breaking news for you. Reuters are reporting British police revealing that the man suspected of being involved in the stabbing of two Jewish men in North London yesterday was known to the government's counter-radicalisation prevent programme. The 45-year-old British national, who was born in Somalia, was subject to a prevent referral in 2020, which was closed in the same year, according to a police statement from the Met. And that is almost it for today. Except, who am I going to give it to? Can we, we've got time. We've got a minute left. Can we do a text vote on who should get the game? But you're not going to remember anyone's names, are you? Because you're not as professional as I am. I'm leaning towards Sam, who asked the question about bagels, because that revealed such a fascinating selection of answers. And speaking of selections of answers, as I make my final decision, I'll read out two texts that tickled me. This from Kevin. He says, "Hi, James. That caller just said yawn, and you yawned. Then he said car, and a car alarm went off. Could you please call him back and get him to say Kevin Colchester will win the Euro Millions this Friday, please? Too late, mate." And this is nice from James. "So you open with a serious Jewish issue and end with bagels and dyslexics learning Hebrew. What a show. It's almost as if someone knows what they're doing. I'll do my... Keep it up," he says. "I'll do my best." All right, Sam, who asked the question about the bagels, gets the Mystery Hour game this week. That is my final decision. And that is the end of today's show. If you missed any of it, you can listen back on our free Global Player or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. So you've got a short version of this show, you've got the full version of this show, and you've got the YouTube version of this show, and you've got social media clips from this show, and you've got the Full Disclosure podcast spawned from this show. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. Now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Oh my goodness me. As you just said, James, the Golders Green attacker was known to the counter-extremism prevent programme. He's still being questioned by counter-terrorist police officers, and Britain's Jews are still reeling and will continue to do so for some time. Politicians have been back and forth between Golders Green. We'll see if more go this afternoon. Promises of £25 million for more security from the government. Wes Streeting joins me in a moment. He's here to talk about a mental health progress he says the government is making. I'll also ask him whether he thinks the proliferation of the scale of anti-Semitism in the UK is a national emergency or not. If you're Jewish, how are you coping?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. In the last hour, the Met police have told us the Golders Green knife suspect was known to the Prevent Counter-Extremism programme. The 45-year-old was referred to the scheme in 2020, and the referral was closed in the same year. The Somalia-born British national was arrested yesterday on suspicion of attempted murder after two Jewish men were stabbed in their North London neighbourhood. They're stable in hospital. Yesterday's attack was the latest in a series in the Golders Green area. Sir Keir Starmer had this message for police chiefs and prosecutors who've been meeting him in Downing Street.
A number of people have been arrested, a number are going through the criminal justice system, and it's really important that we are able collectively to demonstrate that the response will be swift and visible.
The Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan, has welcomed £25 million from the government to boost police patrols in Jewish communities. Two people have been taken to hospital after a smell of chemicals was reported at Britain's eighth busiest railway station. London Fire Brigade say 12 others were treated on an Elizabeth Line platform at Farringdon. The Bank of England has decided to keep the base rate of interest on hold at 3.75%. Analysts think a rate rise could still be on the horizon if the Iran war continues to put pressure on UK inflation. Simon French, chief economist at Panmure Liberum, says the price of fuel looks likely to keep rising.
It's the delayed transmission of energy prices that go up first order at the petrol pump and then into airfares, the energy intensive manufacturing sector. And I think the thing that the Bank of England worries about most is when it starts to impact the services sector and workers start to bid up their wage demands because they want to keep pace with the inflation they're seeing in their weekly shop.
Iran's supreme leader says Tehran will eliminate what he called the enemy's abuses of the Strait of Hormuz in a new statement. Oil prices have surged to their highest level since 2022 because of fears Donald Trump may be planning to escalate the Middle East war. And a neo-Nazi has been found guilty of planning a terror attack at the supermarket where he worked. Undercover officers caught Alfie Coleman from Great Notley in Essex with a handgun and 200 rounds of bullets in a car park in East London. He'd branded individuals as race traitors. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 132 points at 10,345. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, a fine settled day with lots of sunshine, cloudier in the southwest, highs of 21. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
At Tesco, we know that right now every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See tesco.com/Aldi Price Match.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you if you're just joining us here at LBC. As I was mentioning just a few moments ago, it has been confirmed that the suspect in the Golders Green stabbing attacks yesterday was known to the government's Prevent programme, the counter-extremism Prevent programme, and was subject to a referral in 2020, which was closed in the same year. Obviously, that investigation is ongoing, so the police aren't adding much more information to that. We do know, we found out very early on yesterday after this attack, once the police spoke, that the suspect has a history of serious violence and mental illness. And again, in time, in the right order of things, I'm sure we'll find out more about all of that. I'm joined by Wes Streeting, the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care and Labour MP for Ilford North. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sheila.
I know you're making an announcement today about mental health, so that seems like a good place to start. You say that the government is ahead of its offer, ahead of its target on increasing, improving mental health provision. Tell us how.
Well, good afternoon. So in our manifesto, we promised to recruit an extra 8,500 more mental health staff over the course of the parliament. And I'm pleased to report we've delivered on that pledge 3 years early, which is important on two fronts. First and foremost, those extra staff will help us to start turning the tide so that people get the right care in the right place at the right time after years of mental health waits being far too long, so much need going unmet, and in particular, young people not getting support nearly early enough. So that will make a difference. There are other things we've been doing too. So we promised to roll out mental health support in every primary and secondary school in the country. To be fair, our predecessors started rolling out some of that support. But since we came in, 900,000 more young people are now able to access that support in their school. So we're moving in the right direction. As ever with the NHS, it is a case of lots done, but so much more to do. And I wouldn't want anyone listening to think that because things are moving in the right direction when reporting on that progress, that I somehow think it's job done or problem solved, because we are far from that, whether it's physical health or mental health. But I hope on the second front, it does something else too, which is to start rebuilding the sense of trust and confidence that politics and politicians can make a difference, do keep promises, and that things are moving in the right direction, even if there are still many challenges left to solve.
And while it's an important qualification by me to say, and I'm sure you'd echo it, to say that mental ill health, it does not always equate with violence. It sometimes does equate with violence. And we've seen two very signal examples of it in our country in the last year and a half or so, and in inquiries into the events in the Nottingham stabbings and in the Southport killings as well. Do gaps in mental health provision lead to an increased risk to public safety? Because my guess is that is very much the public sense of things.
Honestly, yes. And I don't need a public inquiry in Nottingham, which I very, very strongly support and advocated for, to tell me that that is the case. It is important that we understand and learn from the very serious failures in the case of Valdo Calacane and those poor lives that he took, and the impact and the consequences for those grieving families who I've met, as well as others who were fortunate enough to survive but are still living with the scars, both mental and physical. I mean, I think that what we've seen in the case of some of our more serious and acute cases of mental ill health, where people present either a risk to themselves or a risk to others, has been inadequate supervision in the community, people being inappropriately discharged, and a lack of capacity and or curiosity when people are not presenting to services for treatment as scheduled, and when prescriptions are not being taken up. And those are some of the gaps we're trying to fill through staffing. Changes to legislation are important, which is why we reformed the Mental Health Act during our first session in Parliament, the first reform since 1983, so the previous act was as old as I am. So we are making a difference, but I'm not going to sit here today and pretend that it's job done, problem solved, and that there won't still be further things to learn. And obviously it's far too early for me to comment on the individual and the specifics of the case in Golders Green yesterday. Absolutely. But beyond the obvious horror of anti-Semitic hatred and violence, which we must confront, I am watching this case very closely as the Health Secretary to see what, if any, gaps existed in terms of the NHS dimension of this, because I will want to know, obviously, an act.
Well, that's good to hear, and I'll talk more about that incident a little in a few minutes. I just want to focus on this these NHS targets just a little longer, if I can. If we are ahead of those mental health